that place.
Blog Talk Radio.
But if you want somebody who's going to tell you the truth on these things and remain consistent, if you're looking for someone who actually has core convictions and principles, then that means you want somebody who is not afraid to upset the apple cart and to disturb the status quo and to make some people angry. If what you really want is real change, you're going to have to back a player who is not afraid to rack up some fouls, who's not afraid to upset a couple of referees, and who's not afraid to question everything and everybody. You're going to need somebody who's going to do that. And after he's upset all these people, you are going to need somebody who is going to be willing to stand firm. Not somebody who is watching the clock, checking the time, looking to see, counting heads of how many people approve and how many don't. That's not going to change anything. You need somebody with a core set of principles and beliefs and convictions. And we're kind of low on that right now in black society, but you know what? That's okay too. Leadership is not a team sport. And sometimes, neither is survival. Now, I'm probably going to do an abbreviated broadcast tonight. It just depends on how things go. So I'm going to catch a bunch of folks off guard here, and I'm actually opening up phone lines right now. So you can go ahead and call in right now with whatever you would like to say, so long as it's uncompromising. And this is your opportunity to sound off on it, on anything you've seen, anything you've read, anything you've heard. You do have the opportunity to do that. And this is the place that you can do that at. So definitely you want to check in with us. And as I say, I've opened them up now. So people usually will check with me after the beginning of the top of the second hour. But I decided we'll switch things up a little bit tonight. And let's see if we caught you with your pants down. The telephone number is 646-787-1933. 646-787-1933 is your personal access code to the Blackest radio program that exists, the only one of its kind on planet Earth today. It's your opportunity to call in and to join us. As I say, I may do an abbreviated broadcast. It just depends on how things go. But as you all know, you get the greatest chance to be able to talk for the longest period of time the earlier that you call in. So if you want to talk to TBA for as long as possible, this is the time to be slamming and jamming phone lines. You might be one of the lucky people who wins the lottery and gets picked and has the opportunity to speak to intelligent black society. Go ahead and see if we can take a couple of phone calls here right now. Caller from the 706, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from the 706, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from 706 has been abducted. We'll see if they ever wake back up over there. Caller from the 240, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black Ferris, ATBA, it's Gwendolyn, Fort Meade, Maryland.
Hello, Gwendolyn, sister. Thank you very much for calling in with us. What's on your mind, Black woman?
You know, I've been just, you know, kind of keeping up with a lot of what's going on, and I'm definitely supporting you every step of the way. But I called in maybe a week ago, and I was talking about something maybe that I wanted to touch on today, and that was, like, about dropping people. And I found that I've run into people who know Tammy, you know, and they watch his videos, and I just – even though I find I don't have really anything in common with them anyway, but they come with this pro-black kind of attitude, so I don't know if I may be first tricked into, you know, believing in that they have anything intelligent to say, but then when they bring up Tammy, it just seems to come with a lot of, you know, hate, and I don't want to cut everybody out of my life or away from me, but like you said earlier, it's kind of hard when you're talking truth to people. There's not that many people who stick around to listen. And so I guess it's like, What do you think about kind of cutting somebody off, maybe solely based on...
Mm-hmm. Let me touch on a few things here first. First of all, I usually try to just talk about us and what we do over here at the Black Channel, as you're probably aware.
Oh.
We usually try to confine it to that. I usually also,
okay.
I'm not really a big person on talking about people outside of the Black Channel and whatnot. Like I say, the people who are doing the right thing, we know who they are. The people who are doing the wrong thing, everybody knows who they are. And it's up to, I expect grown people to act like grown people. If you can see that something is wrong, I expect you to do something about it. And if you see that something is wrong and you're still going along with it, what I do is I mark you and say, okay, I can't fool with this person. What the real issue there is, Gwen, is that it's that we are so used to things being bad as Black people. We are so used to nobody else getting it. That if somebody is talking even halfway right, you know, we're like a bunch of women in a town full of drunks and nobody's got a job. And there's one fellow who is talking about how bad he wants a job so he can support his family and get a wife and take care of his kids. Well, hell, if everybody else is a drunk, guess who we're all lined up to try to get a crack at?
All right.
And there's a good number of people out there who are running that game, that they understand that there's not a lot of options out there. So they are holding out that carrot. I'm going to talk differently. It's like what Avenue Rant said about that boho chick thing. The chicks with the bohemian thing. Erica Badu and Lauryn Hill.
I saw that.
those girls couldn't compete with the Nicki Minaj's and the Rihanna's and the Beyonce's.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't compete with them. So they went a different route to get attention. Their target audience is much smaller, but they went to an area that Beyonce and Nicki Minaj and Rihanna could not compete in.
Right.
Not necessarily because they actually believed it, but because they wanted attention and there were just competition was too stiff and too fierce over there in Beyonce land. And
right.
It's the same thing with most of these people out here talking about they're pro-black or whatever like that. That's why I coined the phrase black first. Totally different. That's why you don't hear me on this broadcast referring to black power. I refer to black empowerment. Because most of these people are using these coined phrases and they've turned into cliches for them. They don't actually believe them. They just repeat them because this is what they want you to believe.
Yeah.
But not actually because they themselves believe anything. That's the difference. They don't actually believe anything. Convictions are hard to come by, Gwendolyn. They're very hard to come by. People who have convictions and principles are very hard to come by. When was the last time that you met a black person who told you something that they were willing to kill or die for? When was the last time you met that?
People will kill or die over talking trash or shoes or somebody did something like that, but no morals, no convictions, no. Nothing even close to that. People don't even want to speak about it, or they don't even know what the words mean. So I don't find anything like that. Like you said, I made a post a while ago, and what you said about doing you, I mean, that just really hit home with me because I have a lot of friends who do the do you, and you do me, and I'll do you. You know, and it's like, what does that mean? It's like, no, let's do the right thing. We need to be on a path. We need to have a program set, and we need to be in a direction to where this is how you raise your kids. This is what you do. This is what we do with our time. This is how you educate your kids. Not, you know, you do me, I do you, and I do it with this person, and this person does it differently. And I don't see how anybody can, I don't even know what that means, like you said. And I don't see how anybody can feel like that would work. Even in a household, you don't do you. You do what you're supposed to do. You do what you have to do, not what you want to do. You know, so it doesn't make any sense to me either. I don't understand. I didn't grow up in any type of lifestyle where I did anything, you know, do you. You know?
People
it's foreign
in the military.
To me.
people in the military will understand what I mean when I say what I'm about to say, that individuality is the enemy of discipline.
Yes. Yes.
We cannot be disciplined if everybody is going to be an individual. It doesn't work.
You'll be destroyed.
Discipline means that we all conform to a uniform standard. Discipline does not mean you walk at 30 beats per second and I walk at 20. That's not discipline. Discipline means we do what's necessary so that we're all on the same page. So that when we go into combat, competition, whatever, we're all on the same page out there too. That even under fire, we all know exactly what we're supposed to do. Black folk will sit up and be rancorous with each other. You let one police car show up, not 20, just one. Just one. And he's in charge of everything there. All the talking stops. He's running everything. That's what happens when you demand to be an individual like that.
Exactly. And role play, you know, and knowing your role, you know, and knowing the role of wherever you are, you know, not just work, but in your family, in your home. You know, my father had an established role, and that's what he did, you know, and that's what men in my eyes do. And my mother had a role, you know, and I'm sitting here cooking now. And when you don't teach and you just do you, you can't, that's, you know, we're not teaching our daughters how to cook. We're not, you know, I was in the kitchen with my mother since I can remember. You know, we work around each other like clockwork now and get things done. And a lot of women, you know, I don't know why, you know, maybe they complain. I enjoy it. I enjoy having my house clean and having my husband fed and receiving his compliments and knowing that he's going to work every single day. And I enjoy that. I don't want a do-you lifestyle. You do me or I do me and you do you. And that's crazy. What do you get out of that? That's chaos. You can't raise a family like that, you know. So I totally understand everything that you're saying, and it's very helpful.
How do you have a marriage where one or both parties say, "I'm going to just do what I'm going to do"? How do you have a marriage that occurs in?
Well, you know, I have friends and a lot of military friends who do that. And I think a lot of them, they didn't see their parents have a marriage where you work around each other. And I think that is their attitude, you do me and I do you. And then when the person, you know, when someone's husband does them, then, you know, if the wife really doesn't like them doing them, then they want to stop them doing them. But you said they can do them, and, you know, so it causes problems. And I think that I don't think that you can have a marriage like that. There has to be roles. And I don't even, there's military women who go in, you know, every day and work, and they have fathers who, you know, sit at home with the kids. And maybe some people wouldn't like that, but there are roles that need to be filled. And maybe sometimes those roles switch up sometimes. And, you know, but you always have to be getting things done. There's things that need to be done. And the priorities are very messed up for a lot of people. And I see when you have that type of mentality, do you? There's a lot of women out here that are crying to me. Their husbands are at the gym doing them, playing basketball till 9 o'clock, don't like to show up at home until the kids are already in bed. And that causes other problems, and people just don't understand that there are ways that everybody's lifestyle is different. Everybody's family life is different, yes. But there's just wrong and right. You know, there's things, and people like to really expand on what's wrong. They don't like to go into the right side and say, what can I do better? What can I do right? What can make me better? They always want to expand on what's wrong. And, this doesn't have to be wrong. It's okay for my kids to stay up till 2 or, you know, and do this and miss school the next day. And, you know, and so that's a constant thing that I'm talking to a lot of my friends about is family life. And I look at some of their families and the house is messy and the kids are eating junk and there's no standard time. I could not imagine not having a schedule, especially with children. You know, you have to have a schedule. And so I don't connect with a lot of people. And if you try to tell them something or offer up anything or say anything, I mean, it's the end. You know, you're jealous, you're hating, you know, you don't, I do what I want to do, and that's basically it, you know. And then their kids get up and start getting in trouble, start getting involved in anything, you know. And it's just, there's no structure at all. It's very disappointing and sad to see. There's no structure. Nobody's teaching their children about racism at all or anything that goes with it. You know, you have a family structure, and then you have to teach your kids how to act on the outside. And people don't, they send their kids out there thinking that, you know, the boys are girls and the people are going to treat a boy like a girl, and a black young man, they're going to treat him like a white young girl. And, you know, and those are lessons that my father taught us. You know, I remember just car rides. You just say things, and you just take every opportunity you can to teach and show what's going on. And I remember, you know, my father talking to my brothers about the police when he got pulled over, and the police was very nasty and disrespectful to him. But he taught my brothers how to handle that and how to be a man. And at the end of the whole incident, he was the man to us, you know. And so there's a lot of power in a father, and there's a lot of power in a mother, you know, and seeing them support and strengthen each other and go through the bad and the good times. And so the whole do you thing, that's just, I don't know who that's for. That's a teenage, you know, in the club type thing. You don't actually take that mentality into your home and the way you raise your children and the way you eat and the way you dress. I mean, it's beyond me. But I grew up in that era. In that time.
Well, to go back,
you know,
to your question, you were asking, yes, there before, what do you do with those people? Well, okay, what do you do with those people then?
Well, I'm not good at keeping up. I'm either going to be a friend or I'm not going to be or we're kind of nothing. Doesn't mean I don't like you, but I can't do kind of the halfway thing, you know? So I tend to, with those people, I tend to kind of just really cut them off and see them around Christmas or say hi and things like that. And that's what I feel like I need to do. I don't want to get drugged down, and I don't want confrontation with so many people, you know, or expressing my ideas and getting into confrontations with black people, you know, not even white people, you know. That's why I was kind of asking maybe for your opinion. I mean, is it decent? Is it ladylike to cut friends off? Should you tell them, or should you avoid the confrontation? Because like you said, a lot of this stuff, Jason, it goes over people's head. They don't understand. And I've had a lot of people ask me, why do you hate white people? And I've never said anything about, you know, hating white people and things. I say a lot of positive black things, and people receive that as hating white people, because I say black people need to come together and we need to work with each other and love one another. Why do you hate white people? And that seems to make a lot of black people mad. It seems to make a lot of black people mad, you know, that I could possibly have a problem with white people. I mean, you know, I've gotten into several arguments and things with black people, you know, over whether I like white people or not, or how I feel about white people. And I tell them, do you think white people are in a room having this discussion, arguing with each other, bickering with each other over why somebody has a critique about black people? You know, and it's like, we'll fight so hard for someone else's honor, you know, and I don't get that. You know, everything is kind of discombobulated to me. Not a lot of things make sense when I'm talking to my own people, and it frustrates me a lot, you know. And if I try to bring anything into it, they don't want to hear it. So I guess I need to kind of let them, you know, float away, or let them go the direction that they're going. But it leaves you with not too many friends, you know.
Well,
and I would say a lot of my friends are of other – I have friends a Hispanic friend who gets it, you know, we can talk about it. But I don't have any black friend that I can go out to lunch with and speak about empowerment at all.
You know what it is? It's like learning a new language. And it's going to be sad to say this, but it's really the truth. I mean, it really is. We are really the first, it's like we're the first generation to leave slavery.
Uh-huh.
As if these are all just brand new concepts.
Yeah.
Brand new concepts. What you own and what you control are new concepts. Been off the plantation for 160-plus years, and this is a new concept. That's the shame of it. So,
and
I mean, that really is the thing. There aren't that many black – there very few black people know about it, and even fewer care about it, even of those who know it. Because as you said, most of them are afraid. They are looking – they are so desperate for approval from non-black people that they understand that the number one way to make non-black people unhappy with you is to start talking about black empowerment.
Uh-huh.
And so what do they do? Well, I don't want them thinking badly of me. I will be the watchdog against black empowerment for them.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's
fundamental societal lesson that these people learn early. They learn it very, very early. I must make
mm-hmm.
sure that these people are not unhappy with me. And the one thing that they have always made clear they're unhappy about is black empowerment. So I will see to their empowerment and not black
uh-huh.
empowerment. And that comes from a very simple thing. Most black people are just scared. Most
yeah.
black
and it's
people
like second
are
nature.
Just afraid.
I'm sorry. I just said it's like second nature to a lot of people, and I don't even know if they really understand what they're doing. I don't think they connect it like you connect it. I don't think that they make that connection at all, you know. And what a lot of people will say is, oh, you know, we just don't want no drama, or you know. And it's these are positive things. How is this drama? How is me starting a business and supporting my brothers and sisters and making sure I go out of my way to go to them? How is that drama? You know, and it's just so shocking. And I'm working on my own business right now, and you really, really have done so much to inspire me. And I'm working on my own thing right now. And people are just left and right telling me how it's not going to work, and, well, you got to do this first, and people already did that, and they've already tried this. And it's just everything, you know. It's everything, and it's kind of and I'm not going to be silly and say white people support me and things like that, but I will say that I don't like the fact that I can invite two or three white girls from down the block, and they can purchase a can of my a jar of my sauce, but my black friends will come over and eat it for free and tell me it's good, but they won't purchase it. But they'll go buy, they'll have ragu in their cabinet. You know, and so it really it's like this it's really tricky for me. It's really tricky for me, and I'm very very I see a lot of things. I'm always watching. That's what my father taught me. Always watching. You don't always have to talk, even though I do talk a lot, but I do watch too. And I don't know if I want to be the kind of person though that everything starts to tick me off. You know, and I think sometimes it might seem like it's getting that way, you know, just talking about anything, you know, even, you know, from an argument from Beyonce at the Grammys to Boondocks. I was talking to someone about that the other day and, you know, about the post you made, and it can just be anything, you know, and just based on the way that person kind of reacts and the defense they put up is what I look at. What is their defense, and why is all of this, you know, okay? You know, why are we so accepting of trash? And people say, oh, well, you know, your parents were strict with you, and my parents were not overly strict with me, okay? I had a curfew. I did the things normal people did, okay? They weren't overly strict with me. But there wasn't trash tolerated in my house either. Okay, you know, and there's just a lot of trash in people's house, and they really need to do some cleaning up, you know. And I'm looking at my friends, and they're spending money. I have me and my friend had an argument the other day because I said, well, do you really need WIC? And she receives WIC. And she's military, and she receives WIC. She has a couple kids. And I said, well, do you really need WIC? You know, you don't. This WIC is for people who need it. And she says, well, you know, they give it to me. And I said, I understand that maybe you qualify because, you know, you don't work and only your husband works. But do you really need it? Because your husband just, you just bought this Sony laptop. Your husband just bought some $150 Jordans, you know. And then she started to look at me sideways, you know, kind of like, what are you worried about that for? And I'm really coming from a place where it's like, aren't you embarrassed to use that when you don't need it, especially? You know, doesn't that do something to you? Isn't that immoral? Isn't that silly? You don't need WIC. You know, you don't need it. I understand you qualify, but don't you have pride in budgeting your money and taking care of your children that you planned? Where's the pride where you pinch your pennies? That's what I watched my mother do. When I was younger, we qualified for 20-cent lunches. We qualified for lunches, and my mother did not put us on it. And the school wanted to tell, well, you qualify, we're going to put you on it. And my mother did not put us on it because she said, no, we're fine. And it wasn't even too much. It wasn't about anything other than the fact that we're fine. We have it. This is okay. We're okay. You know? And so it's just not even being on the system, but using it the way people do and thinking that it's okay. And to me, it's really embarrassing, you know? And I hope I never find myself in a position where I may need it, but I don't think anything's wrong when you do need it. But there's just a lot of abuse going on in so many different types of ways, and it's starting to bother me, you know, very badly. And I've started calling people out on it, you know? I've called people out on it, you know?
I've got people I know, associates, friends, who used to be on public assistance. I don't have any associates or friends who are on public assistance. See the point? See the difference there?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because here's the thing, especially like that chick you're talking about, that attitude that she has, that mindset is a virus. You keep hanging out with her, and you're going to become her. You might. The problem with hanging out with bottom feeders is that it's like being in quicksand. Your high-mindedness might be able to raise them a foot, but they will be able to bring you down a foot. And the problem is, do you want to be brought down a foot while you're standing in quicksand?
Nope.
And that's what she is doing. I wouldn't give her the time of day again, because she's just told you that she is perfectly happy being a bottom feeder, that this will be the rest of her life. Everybody, I believe that the number one reason that most people end up in trouble in this world as far as never achieving their goals and their dreams and their maximum potential is because these people fail at the answering of a simple question. Do you want something better? They take what they're given, and if somebody gives them something better or imposes something better, they will adapt to the new environment. But they don't get up in the morning pushing themselves for something better. That's the difference. They don't want to push themselves for it. And how do you deal with that? How do you deal with that? You don't. It's up to her to find motivation in her life. You will spend the next 20 years trying to convince her that she shouldn't be living on WIC. You'll spend the next 20 years trying to do that. Her kids will be grown and gone, and you will still be sitting there trying to convince her to do something better. Understand, here's the question you need to take a look at in yourself. The reason why that conversation is a failure is because one question. Tell me what she's doing with her life. Because being on WIC is a side effect of what you were doing with your life. So tell me, what is she doing with it? What's she building? What's she making? Where's she going?
Well, she's not doing anything. Well, she's a stay-at-home mother, and, you know, she's a good mother. And I think she kind of got caught in maybe kind of like a military trap where women get married young and then they have children young, but they don't have any type of experience or anything, any plans, any goals. So you kind of get trapped at home with babies, and you really can't afford daycare. because you can't make enough money to pay for that daycare. You wouldn't be making enough. But, you know, so I would say she's a stay-at-home mother. But then, you know, even with that, it's like, even though, you know, I don't want to be too harsh on her, but even staying at home with I've seen her and her children watching things that, you know, it's just, you know, so many things. So it's like, no, I don't think she's doing anything. I think she's floating through life. I think she's just doing what she thinks women do, just have a baby and fight with your husband, get WIC or get whatever you can or do whatever you're going to do. And, you know, now they have a nice house. They have a 60-inch screen TV and two rooms, and they have a lot going on. So if you walked in their house, you would think it was a two-income household with two, you know, engineers or something. It's on base, you know, but it's – so, I mean, what's on the outside is not what's going on the inside, though, you know. So I would say that she's – you know, we've had personal conversations about that, and I've tried to – ask her, what do you want to do? You know, let's do it. Let's make a plan together, and we can try to feed off of each other. But she just got the, you know, the attitude that, well, you know, this is, you know, this is what I have, and this is the money we have, and I'll take it from wherever I get it, and, you know, kind of attitude like that. So it's not uncommon. And she's actually maybe doing better than a lot of other people. And when I call these people my friends, I'm kind of talking about people I went to high school with that I probably still communicate with. But, you know, a lot of them are going down the same road. So, as you know, as for her, she's not doing anything, but she's doing better than a lot of the other ones. You know, she's married, you know, but she still has the mentality that a lot of other.
She's doing better than a lot of the rest, a lot of the others are. And she's on WIC.
Yeah, well, a lot of the other people are in government housing. And a lot of other people are in government housing.
Technically, so is she, though.
Well, yeah, yeah. And she's on base, and her husband works, but she's kind of married, and, you know.
What kind of husband?
I'm kind of, I guess, giving her points for that.
What kind of husband? How many children does she have?
Two.
But she qualifies for WIC.
She qualified for WIC at one when she had one, and now she qualifies at two. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My point is their income is not high enough that they don't qualify. You got. You have two grown adults in the house, but you're telling me that their income is so low that they qualify for WIC.
Well, her husband was at first like an E3, you know, and I don't know how much that is they were making, but I guess not. And he's out now. He got out of the military. And we had a thing about that, too. And I said, well, girl, you don't have a job. And he's just getting out because he said he didn't like it. He said he didn't want to listen to people. You know, he said he doesn't want to listen to anybody. So, you know, so he got out. And now they're living with her parents. So, no, now they're not even in the military housing anymore.
Yeah.
They're living
they're
with his parents.
They're doing much better than the other hood rats. She's doing much better. Much, much better.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, I meant some of the people I know. She's doing better than some of the people I know because I know some women I went to high school with that have five kids. And, you know, I guess out of all of them, I guess she's maybe the least worst. You know, I know a lot of. I live right outside of D.C.
That's a real problem among our people, especially the females, is that what black women will do is black women will take a look at. They do not compare themselves to the top of the ladder. Black women look at who is the person who is in the worst condition of everybody I know, and then start comparing themselves to them. White women take a look at Martha Stewart, you know, they take a look at Meg Whitman and say, compare themselves to her. Black women take a look at the dirtiest, rattiest hood rat going down the street with a shopping cart with four of her kids in it and say, well, I must be doing okay. I'm better than her. Instead of looking at Oprah and Beyonce and saying, I ain't doing so hot because I'm not there. That's a major difference of aspiration. I start off by talking about settling, And that is precisely what I'm referring to.
We are telling
lies. They're settling, and they're letting other people tell them lies too, because she got on WIC because her family told her that it's okay. Your family is supposed to be the one shaking their heads the most when you tell them something like that.
Yep. That's exactly true, yeah. And I did that with my – I also did that. Not, you know, I don't have kids and things like that, but I remember you started talking about working out and weight. And I did that with my weight for a long time. I did that, you know, when I got out of high school, I did the college and gained weight and stuff like that. And I still, you know, I kind of knew I gained weight and stuff, but guys, you know, if they still gave me attention. So it got to a point where I got fat and didn't even know I was fat because – you know, people would, oh, you thick, and you know, this and that. And, you know, I had to mature a little bit before I understood, you know, the things that you were kind of talking about. So I definitely did do that. At least I'm not as fat as her, or, well, she's round and I'm curvy and, well, this and that. But I wouldn't look at the in-shape woman and say, that's what I need to be doing. I need to be with her. You know, you make an excuse, well, she's skinny, or that's just her metabolism. Or, you know, that's something that, well, she does this, and I don't have time to do that. And, well, I like myself the way I am, and if you don't like me, then fine. Then, you know, so I definitely have done that a lot.
So I want you to think about one thing here, okay? Most black females will look at Gabernet Sidibe and will say, man, at least I'm better than her. Well, remember something. Just remember one thing. I guarantee you that there are at least two or three women that Sidibe looks at, and she says, at least I'm better than them.
Oh, God.
As incredible as that might sound, as unbelievable as it might seem, I guarantee you she got the exact same statement going through her head. I'll look at her.
Well, yes, Jason, it's been really nice. Thank you for speaking with me. And we covered so many things, and I'm very happy about that. And I'm apologize for calling up and speaking of other things I shouldn't. So I just want to shout out to everybody.
If we ever talk about them, then that's perfectly fine, if we ever talk about them. And I allow people to speak whatever they want to, whatnot. I try not to stop people if they're saying something. But like I say, yeah, definitely, I just want to make sure that people know that when they call here that we are the ideas people, you know.
Oh,
that we
yeah,
talk about,
yeah, not the complaint, not the hotline. Yeah, not the, yeah, yeah, I understand. Not the hating
little
hotline. I understand.
About, little people talk about ideas, and intelligent people, little people talk about other people. Intelligent people talk about ideas, and you talked about a bunch of ideas here. And so, like I say, it's a part of building the brand. People ask about culture and how do we change the culture. And it starts with you and me, Gwen. When you've got hundreds of people like I've got right now watching us, and thousands of people like will be listening to this later, when they hear you and I having just a simple discussion about how being on WIC is not cool, that one thing right there alone, that changes the culture by itself.
It does, yeah. And that's what's important.
Thank you very much for calling us, sister. Please do check back in with us again.
Black first.
Black first, as always. Let's go ahead and see if I can grab another line here. This person has been waiting for a while, and I should apologize for making them wait. You're on live, sister.
Black first, this is Mona Lachey.
Of course it is. Who else could it be? What's on your mind, black woman? Did you hear that call?
Yes, I did, and I heard her speaking with a lot of emotion, and I really could relate to her. When you have a passion for your people, when you want them to be the best that they can be, and you're, you know, crying your heart out to them to do better because you know it can be done, it gets frustrating, and you have to kind of develop a hard skin. So the question that I would want to ask her is this: are you doing it because you love your people and this is just something internal in you that you can't turn off? Are you doing it because you need some friends? Because I can relate to her. And there are many days that I I know, okay, I got it, and I want everybody to get it, and I want everybody to go on this journey with me. And when they don't get it, I will literally bust out crying. I will. And I'm a female, so I do work with emotions sometimes. I try to think as logical as possible, but I do get very emotional about it. And you just have to do it because that's what you're driven to do, and put it out there in the universe and just hope somebody gets it and keeps on going. We can't do this to make friends. Like you said, we need leaders. Everybody has to think that inside of them they possess a leadership quality. And so I don't know, Jason. I really felt what she was saying.
How many other black women, and I'm just speaking since you are a black woman, how many other black women have you met in your life who were perfectly happy living on public assistance, bouncing from one public housing to another, keeping babies on their hips to keep a check? How many have you met in your life like that?
Out of 100, I would say maybe 75. That will say they're not happy, but they will not change it. They are complacent being there, but they just want to complain and moan because they see me doing something different. So they want to just play the game with you. So it looks like they're really trying to do something, but they're not. Because like you said, when you have your second and third and fourth baby on welfare, that's where you want to be. I believe everybody can make one mistake and have one child out of wedlock. But when you go to that second, third, fourth, and fifth, what have you actually learned? And by displaying that, it tells me you have learned nothing and this is where you want to be. And this is your career. This is how you're going to live your life. Until some man on a white horse comes and saves you. And this is what you're going to teach your children.
But nobody ever sits up here and asks themselves, you know, why would the guy on the white horse settle for a chick on WIC?
You know what, Jason? There are a lot of guys that do that. They will bypass me and another good woman that out here working hard and sacrificing and being disciplined and trying not to be materialistic and that will have their man's back. They will go right past you to that. They will. You know, I used to live one place and I would walk past this young lady's house and every day her door would be open and she would have men in there slapping dominoes and drinking 40 ounces. And here I am going to an empty house every night. And I'm like, damn, what's wrong with me? I have a nice job, a nice car. I'm responsible, you know, and I can't get any action. And I found myself being very, very jealous of that. And I had to really think and talk to myself and really look at the picture. Okay, she's on the county. Okay, they're taking advantage of her. Okay, they don't have anything going, you know, for themselves. So, Mona, do you really want that? It's a little bit of attention more, is it better than morals and values and conviction? And I really had to, like, kind of slap myself on the head. Because out of loneliness, you see a different picture than you really should be seeing in reality. And I had to wake myself up and keep it moving. But there are men out there. If you don't have nothing, you're going to gravitate to somebody that doesn't have anything. It's hard to do right out here. It's easy to do wrong. You can do wrong all day long. You have to check yourself all the time when you're trying to do right. Because for people that's doing right, what is our motivation? What is my motivation for being self-employed and trying to do the right things when there's somebody over there with a three-bedroom and $93 a month rent? And they can't keep it. They can go to school. They can get WIC. They can get money. They can get an EBT card. And I'm over here trying to be a law-abiding citizen as much as I possibly can. What's my motivation? Do you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. I have a hard time believing that it's worthwhile men who would be passing you by. Too often black women have a way, and I'm just saying women because you're a woman, But black people, but black women have a way of looking at somebody and, I mean, I find it impossible to believe that he's a worthwhile person. He might not be thrown totally the hell off, but there's a difference between a worthwhile person who is acknowledging something. Because if he's passing up a woman who's about something to get one who isn't, just because he has a job and isn't all tatted up does not mean he's a worthwhile guy. It does that not mean that he is a suitable individual, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I think too often we make the criterion so shallow that, you know, we are giving the title of good men and good women, but we're giving the title of good men to guys who it doesn't actually apply to. Just because a female does not have bastard babies does not mean that she's wife material. It means that she's not just thrown the hell off material. It only, all that means is she's not thrown the hell off. That's all it really means. Just because a guy has a job and is not currently incarcerated does not mean he's Mr. Right. It means he has a job and he's currently not incarcerated. He's not just thrown the hell off. But that's all it really means is the difference.
Well, let me ask you this question. Would you think I was lying if I told you at 53 years old, in a 15-year span, I have never met a man that was attracted to me that had a legitimate job?
Okay, now that kind of goes beyond something, though, doesn't it? I mean, that kind of just goes beyond the circumstances there, then, I would think. That would go to, okay, what am I looking at?
And you're absolutely correct. It might be circumstances, but this is a story that I know a lot of people can tell. A lot of females can tell this. And there might be men that meet women in a 15-year span that are not worth anything either. So I really think it's because of a generation fell off. And there were no morals, values, and convictions instilled in these kids, and they're just raised by the television and raised by whatever people are doing right now, what is trendy. Whether it's wrong, right, or indifferent, Susie's doing it, so it must be okay for me. So when you run across a person with morals, values, and convictions, you're labeled old school or, you know, some other kind of stuff. Nobody does that anymore. Nobody cares about that anymore. What do they say they do, these youngsters say they do? You only live once. Live fast or you can die young. All this crap that they're doing.
I mean, my thing about it, though, is as a woman, and this applies to men also, but, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, you're ultimately you have to look at your choices. And sometimes we let the fact that we don't have great choices lead us to make bad choices or to settle for a bad choice because we put an artificial requirement on ourselves that we have to make a choice as opposed to saying, you know what, I'm going to hold out until I make the right decision.
And you're absolutely correct. We do a lot of things out of loneliness and we do a lot of things on wanting to get along. So I want to say to your listening audience who's much younger than me, you need to find out when you're young. Because when you get my age, the pickings are slim. And basically the people that are out there, they've already, you know, been used up, discarded, damaged, and everything else. And it's very, very tragic, and it's very, very trying on a person when they're trying to hold out for the right person. And you do engage with stupid people or people that you have no business dealing with because you get lonely sometimes. So we just have to stay fast, and you have to pick your mate early. You have to know what you want in life early. You do. It's always going to be time to be entertained and to have fun and travel and do all those things. You say you're an adult at 21, act like an adult, do adult things. And I'm only speaking of this is because I've experienced it. And like I said before, I wish somebody would have told me this And maybe sometimes experience is the best teacher. But I would hope that as we are on this broadcast, that people don't have to experience that. People wake up and people do the right thing.
I'm 37. I can tell you it's not easy. And I'm 37. And I can imagine how hard it is for those who are younger. We as people, I mean, the one thing I've tried to keep in mind is that my most precious commodity is my time, and that I'm not going to get a second chance to make first choice. And some decisions are permanent. So I've just tried to keep, especially what you did with your time. Believe it or not, you can get another wife and you can get more kids. You can't get that day back yesterday that you wasted with the wrong wife and messing up your kids. You can't get that back. You can get more of all those things. You cannot get those days back.
You're correct. You're correct.
Well, Mona, if you want to, you're more than welcome to stay on the line. I'm going to pick up a few more callers here. Caller from the 562, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Okay, see, I pushed one because I thought that meant I get to listen and didn't have to talk. This is Nene. How are you, Mr. Black?
Hello, Nene. This is the Nene and Momo show now.
I was just listening. I pressed one. I was like, he's not going off on me today. I'm going to press one so I can just listen. And I still get
no.
called.
No, you should listen to yesterday's broadcast because I officially surrendered yesterday. I have officially surrendered to Blog Talk technical support, technical non-support, just whatever at this point. I'm just like, all right, just I give up. Whatever they're going to do is just what they're going to do. So, no, I'm not blowing up on anybody else about this unless they don't tell me that they were just listening, in which case it'll be a different matter. But I'll go ahead and put you back on hold here. And like I say, I'll just leave it up to the powers that be in the meantime. And the Nene and Momo show, when's there going to be another one, Mona?
Excuse me?
When's the next Nene and Momo show?
Next Wednesday.
All right, next Wednesday, because you all have your own Blog Talk program. And what time does it come on?
7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
All right, let's go ahead and see if we can grab another caller here. Caller from the 314, you're on live with the Black Channel. Everything else doesn't bother me. It's only when this happens that it bothers me. They could just very easily just say, hey, I thought I was just listening too, but I'm not. Last try, caller from the 314, you're on live. Or at least you were on live. Caller from the 786, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from 786-262, you're on live with the Black Channel. Sounds like they're in there babysitting. Caller from 786 has been abducted, apparently. We're going to start working on remedial education for Black folks here, Mona. See if we can get them to understand what they're supposed to be doing, what they're supposed to be doing when they get on the phone, since it seems to be a bit of a lost art for some. Let's see if we can try picking up another one here, somebody who hasn't been waiting quite so long. Caller from the 706, you're on live with the Black Channel. What are the chances that I can have three people in a row who are on the line but not on the line? Caller from 706-580. You're on the line with the Black Channel. Okay. If anybody is in the 706 area code, if you see 706-580-3654, please let them know that they are ready for your close-up, Mr. DeMille. Apparently, they're a little bit lost. Well, at least I know that Mona is there, which is always helpful. Mona, I wanted to ask you this since you are here. We talked to the young man yesterday about who wanted to go to barber, who was in barber school. and was talking about getting this thing off the ground. Have you thought that maybe the young man, because there were several things I was hearing there and a couple of things that I got to thinking about after he said that. Did it strike you that maybe he is having issues where maybe he's settling? That is, that he's not really sure what it is he wants to do. And so instead of making the right choice, he just decided to make a choice. And instead of doing the right something, he just decided to do thing. And now he's trying to find a way to finagle that in a manner and so it's actually produced, productive. Did you get that vibe off of him? Because I did also.
I kind of got that vibe, but I kind of got that he was misdirected. And he didn't study what he was trying to do. He's looking for friends in school. School is out in high school. He doesn't know that he's an adult now, and he's trying to start a career. And I think he might be a young African-American boy that has not interacted with, you know, ghetto people. And he's trying to prove to his blackness to these people instead of focusing on going to school. That's what I heard from him last night. He's not there, just there to learn. He's there to make friends.
And that's the thing that was to me when we heard it, is that that's not the purpose of going into business. You don't go into business for the purpose of making friends. You go into business for the purpose of making power, wealth, and influence. You don't go into business for the purposes of getting buddies. You go into it for the purposes of making money. And he was focusing on how many friends do I have around me. But did you notice, you know, it was way later before he started asking about, oh, by the way, how do I do my business?
Exactly. Because when I'm doing my business, I'm doing my business. And I had a coworker that said, Mona's mean. Mona's evil. She doesn't even talk to her friends. But at Christmas time, she gets the bonuses. She gets the Christmas presents. She gets all these tips. So I'm going to start being mean, you know, too. And it didn't work out too well for her because I wasn't being mean. I was being genuinely business-minded. How you doing? What you need? Let me provide this service. If we become friends in the interim, so be it, but that was not my main objective. So I was genuine in who I was, so my clientele respected me for that. I don't have time to jibber-jabber when I have 17 people on the books, and they're looking at me like, what is she doing? She needs to be quiet. This is not a talk show. This is not comedy hour. I need my hair done. So I conduct my business in a business-like fashion, and if we become friends, then so be it. But that is not my objective. My objective is to provide a service that I will be paid for. And my hair speaks for itself, and it will give me another client.
It's very difficult to get black people to focus on that aspect of it because we spent our times with our impacted self-esteem and trying to spend the rest of our lives repairing that. And I really do think it has an effect on you. It can be lifelong, as we're seeing. We spend all of our time looking at all the things we didn't have, and we spend the rest of our lives trying to get that self-esteem back. And in the process, we just totally overlook power and influence altogether. I thought the first questions that he was going to ask, I thought that the first thing he was going to ask was about how do I start making money while I was in school, but he didn't do that. And even when you were talking about the apprentice program, you know, he was really shying off of that.
Yeah, you know, he never caught on to that. Yeah.
He really wants
he
to be in that classroom.
I'm sorry.
He really wants to be in that classroom. You know, there's something in that classroom that he really, really is trying to get reconciled to himself. And that was the issue that we were having was that, you know, how – you're not in school for the purposes of being in class. You're in school for the purposes of getting a skill set that will make money for you. But your goal is supposed to be to start making money as quickly as possible. And that has nothing to do with whether or not you're still in school.
Exactly. Exactly. That's that hustle mentality that they don't understand. And he did not attach to that. The light bulb didn't go off. Ooh, I need to cut and go to school. I need to get my name out there and go to school. I need to practice my craft and go to school. I need to start being the best right now, today, at this moment, and go to school. He didn't catch that. And he has inboxed me, and I will talk to him later about it. But we are a misguided people. And the people that have businesses, and this is what I want to ask you, the people that have businesses and are successful, why aren't there mentors for other people that want to have businesses? And this is the thing that I found out, Jason, when, like I said, I had my salon for 8 years. I never said I was the owner for 4 years. They thought somebody else was the owner because I was the first and the last in there because I didn't want to make people think that I was better than them because black people seem to think that when you get a business, you think you're uppity. I'm providing a service. My mother has always called me a social worker. I have a bad thing of wanting people to excel and be happy, even at the cost of myself. So that was a lesson I had to learn, that everybody can't go on your journey. So, yeah, we're messed up. We are. And then finally I said, you know, I had to tell people because I said so, because I am the owner, because this is my business. And that was hard for me to do. It really was. I had to fire my best friend. That was hard for me to do. But I had to learn how to
separate. It was hard for them too.
You know, I had to learn how to separate business from personal. And they should have been fired maybe 3 years ago. And here it is 3 years later, I'm getting the strength of, like, I'm giving you a two-week notice. You got to go. And I'd hope that they would separate business from personal. But it was detrimental to my business.
It was 20 years ago. And I had had the fortune of meeting somebody, and he was in the restaurant business. He had a very successful restaurant, made a lot of money. And I had asked him about it, and he had told me how he had gotten together with a friend of his, and they had come into some money, and they decided we wanted to open a restaurant and open a bar and grill. And I asked him, I told him, I said, you know, man, I've been thinking about opening a bar myself. At one time, I thought about it. I was thinking about opening a bar myself, but I said, but I got two problems. Number one, I've never had experience of that kind of thing. And number two, you know, I don't drink or anything like that. So not really sure what I would do. And he told me, that's great. And I was like, really? He said, yeah, that makes it even better because if you don't drink, that probably means you don't have any friends who do. And he said that would be the single biggest problem that you have is your friends coming in there trying to get free beer all the time. And I was like, you have that problem? He says, sometimes I do, but I go through a lot of friends is what happens. Now, to your earlier question that you asked me about why is it that established black business owners don't mentor younger people, Mona, in all honesty, it's because most black people, young or otherwise, are not serious about starting a business. If I ask somebody about buying a car, what's the first thing, of course, I'm going to ask them? Well, of course, we want to know what kind of car you want to buy, but the next thing I want to know is, how much money do you have? Now, if I talk to first person and he says, I wish to purchase a car, and he knows we live in a capitalist system, and yet his answer to me is, I have $0. Is this man really serious about buying a car?
No.
Now, if I talk to the second person and get the same answer, and then I talk to the third and the fourth and the fifth and get the same answer, then I talk to the Asian kid and he's got $8,000 in his pocket. Guess what? That kind of experience makes an impression on you. Like I said last night, most black people think of having a business as winning the lottery. If I can open up a business, it will just be a money machine that I'm able to extract dollars from so that I don't have, if I hear one more black person say to me, I want to have my own business so I ain't got to work with these white folks no more. If I hear one more black person say that, I'm probably going to throw the phone at them if I'm on the phone with them. Because that's not the reason that you go into business. The reason why the people who like me online right now and in other places, the reason why they're failing despite their best efforts, the reason why they're blowing up and things are blowing up in their faces is because they don't have the right motivations. You cannot succeed in life when you're going around as Hate Incorporated. You can't do that. Hate Incorporated don't make no money. You can't make money based on what you're against. You have to make money based on what you're for. Even pest exterminators don't make money based on what they are against. They are not against insects and rodents. They are for an insect and rodent-free home. And they keep doing their job until the home has rodents. Hate Incorporated doesn't work. What you're against doesn't work. It never has, and it never will. It does not take a core of values to be a member of Hate Incorporated. That doesn't work. And that's why these people are not succeeding. So it's very hard to get an established black business owner to accept a black person there, especially when we have such a horrible, bad habit of, he's already hired enough black people already. He knows what to expect from his black employees. And now we're asking him to spend more time on somebody else. That's made an impression on him. Well, I've got somebody on the line here. This is supposed to be Ariel here. Ariel, is your phone working?
Yes, I think it's working now.
Okay, I was about to say, we were going to hold a collection for you here. Get you away from that track phone.
No, it's not a track phone. It's a good phone. It's nice.
Apparently it's not, but...
Oh. Okay, yeah, you're right. Sure.
And what's in your mind, black woman?
I have a question. Now, I hear you say that you can only be pro-black if you have a black wife and then have black children, but the thing that I want to know about is how do you feel about adoption? How does that work in a pro-black family? Is that not allowed at all?
I don't understand what the question is. Are you saying you can't be pro-black and be an adoptive parent?
No. Like, what is your opinion on adoption? That's what I'm asking.
I'm trying to find out what does that have to do with being pro-black.
I can answer
the question, but I need to understand what the dilemma is that you're asking.
Okay, so what I wanted to know, like, if you adopted a child, any race at all, would that be, like, against pro-black? Because you say that all black is pro-black, like, all black. Mixed children don't count, things like that. So I was wondering about adoption.
All right. First of all, let's talk about, quote, mixed children. That's a very subjective term. Whenever you have some idiot who goes around and says that this person is black, but that person over there who might be mixed, we already broke those down and destroyed them on this broadcast. If you want to go back and go listen to the one I did on interracial dating before about that, I already broke all those things down. But essentially, when somebody sits up here and tells you that a mixed person is not black, what you need to ask them is, what is black? Well, both of your parents are black. Okay, define for me how we determine that they are black. And how we determine this person is mixed. And then the next thing that they will say is, well, this person has to have this much hair black in them, and this person has to have that much. Of course, the next question becomes,
okay,
how do you determine that this person has this much and this other person does not? And then lastly,
yeah,
even if you can get over all that, lastly, what we come to is, and where does allegiance come into this? Because what if you got some blue-black Negro, like Wesley Snipes, who has nothing but rancor for black women, or Dennis Rodman, who has nothing but disgust for black women? What do we do with somebody like him? So we give him more rank than somebody like Malcolm X, who went and found the blackest, darkest woman he could find? I'm going to give these two guys more rank? I don't think so. Obviously, all that melanin didn't do them no good. So that's my thing about the mixed thing. Now, about adoption, can you be pro-black and adopt a non-black child? My first question would be, why would you want to do that? When black children constitute a majority of children who need to be adopted, why would you say, I will bypass the black children to get a non-black child? What is it within a person that makes them feel that they need to do that? That would be my answer to it. Well, why do you hate black children so much? It's easier to adopt a black child than anything else. Why do you not want a black child?
Yeah, I get that. That's the first thing I got when you, I get that part completely.
Now, in a perfect world, in a perfect egalitarian society, that doesn't exist, never mind. But in a perfect world, if you just wound up doing something like that, if you and your pro-black wife were stranded in Bangkok and there's nothing but little Asian kids over there, it's this or the bus, I suppose you could, but here's the problem. Please explain to me how you pass along a black legacy to an Oriental child or an Asian child
or a Latina child.
How do you do that?
Yeah, I don't think you can. That doesn't even sound right.
Do you know how badly in the head you're going to screw that child up by trying to turn them into a black child that you never had? That's like the fathers who turn their daughters into tomboys, Venus and Serena Williams, by trying to turn them into the sons that you never had. He had two daughters, one after the other. No sons, two daughters. What did he do to those two girls? He turned them into the sons he wished he had had.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're going to do is turn that little Asian child or that little Mexican child into the black child that you never had. The problem is he will never be that. Don't care how much he inflects his voice or whatever. He can pit bull and Eminem all he wants to. He will never be able to. Oh, what's his name? Paul Wall. Who's a lot better than Eminem, by the way. He can do that all he wants to. He will not stop being Robin Thicke. I don't care how many black women he swoons and how many he sleeps with. You're not going to turn him into a black child. What I'm saying is that, do you really want to go down this road to begin with? Because it's a dead end. It's a cul-de-sac. There is no way through. You can only back the way you came. You cannot end up in a different place. You can go back where you started, but you can't go some other place. Are you sure?
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I don't know. I must be, thinking, there's so many different kids in adoption. Nobody's adopting, really. Not many people are adopting. So that's why I was thinking that. But now I completely get it. It's I have a question because it's going to mess up the kid anyway. So I understand.
Well, the thing is, the majority of children in adoption are black.
I didn't know that.
No, the majority of children needing to be adopted are black. That's why it's so easy to get a black child. That's why you see all these white folk with black children. Because I was wondering about that. All these orphanages have no problem parting with their black children.
Right.
They are the unwanteds. So Sandra Bullock and all the rest of them, it's so easy to do here and abroad because that's the majority of them. Unless you go to someplace like Romania or Thailand or something, someplace where they simply do not have a black population. But if it's a place with a black population, the majority of your eligible adoptees will be black. Now, you try being a black parent and get your hands on some white kids, you better come with a team of lawyers. because they are not going to want to part with that white child to a black family. Because even adoption agencies understand the schism that that creates. Even they understand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a bit of racism involved there, too, when you can give away the black kids, but you have to bring Johnny Cochran to get a white one. You know, they don't have a problem giving the black children white parents, but if a black family wants a white kid, all of a sudden you got to, it takes an act of Congress. Yeah, that's a bit of racism in there. But the other thing is that they understand that schism. Where the black kids are concerned, it's not like you got a bunch of black people who are even qualified to adopt a child. That's the other thing. How many black people are actually even qualified to adopt? I didn't say foster home, to adopt.
Right. Because, see, I would... I don't know. I'm only, you know my age, so I'm not sure what I want to do in life, but I wanted to adopt because of the whole childbirth thing. I mean, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I just don't want to do that. So,
what
I mean,
in hell? Ariel.
I don't know. I'm only 16. You know that. I don't know what I'm going to do in life, but at the moment.
Why are we even discussing pregnancy ops at 16.
No, it's not like that. It's not like that. I just want to know why I'm thinking about my future. So I don't know why I'm thinking about my future right now. I just do that. I don't know. You're right. You're completely right. But I just think about things like that. I can't help it. I just think about my family, how I'm going to raise kids. You know, it's just, maybe it's a female thing. You think that might be it?
Mona? This is why I am 37 years old and have no children. And if I do,
I feel bad. I'm sorry.
If I do, I better not have a daughter because chastity belts are coming back in style. Let me tell you, I'm just gonna buy them underwear that looks like a straight jacket. I'm just not taking any chances because you'll talk to me for a few minutes until you look. Don't worry about it. Then you go to school and talk to Devontae, and he'll want to hold a 3-week conversation about your reproductive organs. And, I mean, I'm stressed enough as it is. I can't handle that. Look, Ariel, you are 16 years old, okay?
Yes, I know. I'm too young. I know.
You are it's natural for you to be concerned about what's going to happen, okay? But you've got plenty of time, okay?
Yeah, I know. I need to focus on school. I know, because school has been crazy for me. I'm doing makeup work from like weeks ago because of crazy school things. So I understand exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah, don't worry about that. I mean, it's amazing about females. Once you all become aware of that biological clock, that it's actually in there, you all start watching it from day one. You know, it's like, girl, you got 25 years. Yeah, but you never know what'll happen by 17. I promise you, it's
when you bring up like topics about pro-black families and stuff, it just makes me think about kids. I don't know. It's just when you speak, I just think about things. That's all. Just things like that or whatever topic.
No. Look, okay? Black empowerment is an urgent issue. White supremacy is an urgent issue. Dealing with our economic status is an urgent issue. Ariel's childbirthing is not an urgent.
Yeah, you're right. You're completely right. Sorry.
Yeah, on our list of problems right now, that one's way down there. It's like that one's down there with the asteroids hitting the Earth thing, like Deep Impact and Armageddon. I mean, it's down. Not that we don't care. It's just that you've got a lot to worry about. That's not one of them. What you're supposed to be worrying, you want to have something to worry about. Before you worry about children, you need to worry about what kind of house you're bringing them into. Are you bringing them into a home that is able to support them? Because it would be different if Ariel were making $250,000 a year and talk about having children. At that point, I'd be like, well, is she emotionally mature enough to handle this? Because she's got the finances taken care of. But is she emotionally mature enough to be talking about being a mother? In your case, we're dealing with all emotionally, mentally, financially, socially, the whole nine yards. So get out of 10th grade And then let's talk about, you know, talk about that biological clock thing. Now, if there's, I'm not going to get deep off into this. If there's some medical issue going on, even if that were the case, you are too early along to even be worrying about that. Even if there were a medical issue, you're too early along. Don't even bother worrying about it, because that should be the last thing in your mind right now. In about 10 years, when you get your finances right and get your money together and get your house together, and oh, by the way, when you're a grown woman and you've actually experienced something in life and you actually have made a decision, because if your biological clock is the reason that you're doing something, that's not a decision, that's a reaction. When you have made a decision that you are that you found the right man, that he's not throwing the hell off, and this is the person that you want to spend the rest of your life with, you join together with him and get married, you become a family, and then you start talking about children. Because a family begins with a man and a wife, not with a woman and children. And that was
yes,
the other part.
You're right. I completely
didn't hear one word, not one word came out your mouth about being married. It's just, can I adopt?
Oh, no. Oh, that really sounds bad. Yes. Oh, that really sounds bad. But you're right. I need to start completely, like, switching up my goals, because right now with my classes, it's just completely crazy due to a bunch of stuff that I'm not going to get into. But I need to get together on these schoolwork, because I'm supposed to be going up to Texas, and I don't want to miss that because, you know, we might be moving up there, and I really want to get on the ball, so I don't have to be stuck in St. Louis and go up to Texas with my sister for the summer. So you're completely right about that.
That's all the way down the road. even if you did want to adopt, I think the average adoption is like $10,000. So, you know, you just need, well, I guess, it depending on where you are. Adoptions are not free, and they're not cheap. So even still, you got a ways to, you don't even have a job yet talking about adopting. No. Not unless you're waiting for your dad to kick off or something, you know. If that's the case, you know, he needs to check his brakes. But no, don't worry about that. You just get your schooling done. You get grown. Find you somebody with some sense, and the kids will take care of themselves. I'm 37 and I don't have any children. What does that tell you? That tells you a family takes care of itself. You don't have to hurt yourself over any of that, man. If you find the right person, you'll know, and hopefully it'll be the right person. But when it's time, it's time. As long as you don't have no damn oops babies. But if it's the right time, it's the right time.
Yeah, I really want to work on, when I get out of school, I don't know what I'm going to do. This is just my opinion or what I'm going with, but I want to start a career first before anything. I want to get some money going. That's what I really want to do. So I got to get my schoolwork done, because I'm a junior. I got 1 year left. I need to get on some scholarships, get some good grades going. I got to do something, because I think, I'm not going to say, I'm not going to try to be bragging or anything, but I think I'm too smart to end up in a dumb situation. So I got to focus on that more. You're completely right.
Absolutely. Well, like I say, just focus on that. As far as adopting, sister, I'm sad to say there will be plenty of black children for you to adopt if it comes down to it. Unfortunately, I'm able to assure you there will be plenty. Because for every Ariel, there are 8 Shaniquas, Bushiquas, Chandelicas, Chandeliras.
Yeah, I know. That's almost my whole school right there.
Well, you will have plenty of pickings between their cast-off children in 10 years, unfortunately.
Sad.
How about your last words, sister?
Well, thank you for all you're telling me. I'm gonna be listening in, but right now I have a bunch of makeup work to do. I have a math packet. I'm going to keep doing that with a little bit of help from the internet. And just thank you so much, okay?
Well, thank you for checking in with us, sister. Please call us again. Mona, what was that about?
Wow. Yes, she does need to focus on her work. And she
Ariel's
really
a wonderful kid. She really is. I mean, she is a wonderful kid. I'm going to have to keep my eye on her now, because if TDA, yes. What do you think about adoption? Not for you. I go in the I don't make friends with teenagers. I do the father thing on that. No, not you. What are you talking about adopting anything? You better adopt this mad book over here. That's what you file papers on.
But exactly.
How do you end up 16 years old? I want to adopt. You sure you don't want to graduate high school?
Exactly.
Adopt. Kids, what the hell's the matter with these kids today? Plus, she's adorable. You just got to keep an eye on her. I'm going to ship her out to California so Mona can.
And it's good that she's asking. It's good she's asking questions, but she needs to focus on that schoolwork.
Yeah, but I don't know. Somebody must have scared her and made her think there was a shortage of black babies to be adopted. I think that's where that came from. Is that? But wait a minute. What if I can't have any kids? And you know, there's not the black children out there to adopt. I'm like, kid, you haven't asked around. You know, we got a lot of problems that we're worrying about in this world, but a shortage of black babies to adopt, unfortunately, is not one of them. Unfortunately.
True.
See if we can grab caller from the 510. You're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from the 510. You're on live.
Yeah, Jason Blake, this is Danny from California from yesterday.
Hello, Danny from California. I thought I was about to have to put you on blast for a moment.
Nah, it's all good. As long as
sound
you're
like
keeping it honest.
Sound like a Mountain Dew commercial back there. What is going on?
Oh, okay. I had to turn off speakerphone real quick.
Well, I was just wondering what it was. I was like, that's like some surfer music or something from the 70s. I didn't know what was going on back there for a minute. I was about to say, if we stopped his garage band, maybe we ought to let him finish first. He's got a good rear in front of him.
Shit. No, just focusing on my career right now and trying to get a business going. But from what you guys were saying, I get everything you guys were trying to say to get into the into that two-year program and everything. I just want to get my barber's license and then go into a barber shop and then learn from that owner and then get my own barber shop. That was my main goal to do. Everything you guys said, I heard it. If there's anything else that I missed, I would love to hear it again if I missed anything.
No, nothing in particular about that. It's just that, like I say, it's the only thing that was missing there is, I don't know, I guess for me and Mona, because we understand about the age thing, is the urgency that we were looking at. And it's the urgency that still concerns me. I'm like, man, I don't want you waking up every day saying money, 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 money. I don't want you doing that, you know. Just don't sit up there in the shower, you know, counting your dollar bills in your pocket 7 and 8 times. Don't do that. But do understand that now for Ariel, her biological clock, she needs to stop looking at that. That's not really a factor in her life. You, on the other hand, that financial clock, that one is a factor. So as urgent as she was about adopting children that she really doesn't need, that's where you ought to be. You know, it's just, man, how quickly can I get the hell out this classroom and get into a hands-on situation? That's the thing right there, because unfortunately for you, especially where you are, time is against you. Time is against you in a bad way right now.
Yeah. And with the whole friends aspect at the barbershop, there's completely not really everybody I talk to there. Everybody there is on another agenda. I'm on a different type of agenda, which case in point is, I want to learn how to build a barbershop, not build friendships around me. So I already have that one scratched off my plate. So what I'm doing right now, I'm just reading different books, like 48 Laws of Power, Why White. I'm just reading different type of books to enhance myself, because I don't want to be the same person that I was in the past, where I would just get into foolish things and not really progress further. So basically what I meant by I had zero friends, which what I was trying to say, I cut off all my stupid friends that I used to hang with because they did the same things over and over repetitively. So I wanted to break myself from that type of mentality and get into a new type of form of thinking, which is I want to be around people that are smart just like me and then are going to teach me certain things that are going to help me progress further into my adulthood, not me staying into this teenage smoking, drinking, getting into stupid type of things type of mentality.
Well, where you are, and Mona will back me up on this, although I'm sure you've probably seen it, and I know this even living in Louisiana. Do you know how many Latinos out there know how to cut black hair?
Yep, that's exactly what my instructor told me.
I mean, your major competition 20 years ago when Mona was getting started, your competition were other black hairstylists. Today, man, you're up against white folk and Latins. That's what you are up against out there in California today. The other brothers are not even your major competition anymore.
No, it's not them. And I got my eye directly on the whites and the Hispanics and the Asians that are around me that are cutting hair. They are the ones that focus more on learning the craft and getting out and getting their own business. So they already know the game.
If you all know about this, and I'm sure that Mona does, and you might know about it too, there's that big hairstylist contest that they have every year. Like, for what, the last 2 or 3 years, there's been a white guy who's won it. It's a black hairstyling contest. And, like, for the last 2 or 3 years, it's been a gay white fella who's won it. I don't know what his name is off the top of my head. But it's been a gay white guy who has won the black female hairstyling contest for the last 2 or 3 years. Don't believe me, go look it up for yourself. Look it up for yourself.
But Jason, I wanted to ask you a question. You said long ago in a broadcast of yours, you said that to another caller, he wanted to build a business with just black people, and you said that wasn't the best answer to do. I that's exactly what I want to do with my barbershop. I wanted to bring black empowerment people just like me to a barbershop, not bring ignorant people to it, but black people that want to build. So would you still think that's a bad idea to just bring all black people that think just like me, or just branch out and pick, you know, different white people that are good at cutting hair, Hispanic people that are good at cutting hair, and just bring every type of race, or as a business person?
You are young, and because you are young, you are idyllic. And Mona wants you to disavow yourself of that idealism. Ideals are a wonderful thing, okay?
Okay.
And you never want to lose your principles. But don't confuse principles with ideals. Don't confuse the two. An ideal is just that. If I had everything in place perfectly the way I wanted it, this is what I would do. Principles are, this is what I will do if I have the opportunity and ability. This is a core belief that I believe in. But I can't always practice my principles. I just can't. It's like if you work at a job, and, you know, I had Jennifer Moran on here. Now, you've seen her rock hard as she can be. And even she's told you that there have been times that she's been caught with nothing but a vending machine. Now, you know there's nothing healthy in there. Her principle is eating clean. But is that her ideal is eating clean, and her principles are to eat clean. But her principles also say, I'm not going to let myself go glycemic and fall out because I don't have ideally what I would like to eat. If you are a business person, you go into business for one goal only, to make money. And when your ideals get in the way of your of revenue, it's time to take a look at ideals. Your ideals should never get in the way of revenue. If the ideals are in the way of revenue, the problem is not the revenue. The problem is your ideals. I was a young man, and I was younger than you were, and I've told this story before, that I had, you know, a business to go into, and I was holding out for these black folk who I wanted to work with because I wanted to start a black company, and it was two white guys who were like, man, you've already got the equipment and everything. Join up with us. We'll take this whole city over. and I told them no.
Mm.
Not because I couldn't do it, not because I didn't have the equipment, but because I had an ideal of this wonderful black business that was just going to revolutionize the way things were going to be. Don't you know that the brothers I tried to get with me never moved?
Mm.
They sat there and told me that we were making good enough money working for the white man that we were working for, and what I was proposing, us doing it on our own, every time I asked about doing it on our own, they said, but what if we fail? But what if we fail? But what if we fail? And the two white guys were like, man, we're going to tear this thing up. We're going to hit the ground running. We're all over the place. I stuck with, but what if we fail? Well, guess what didn't happen? Now, the two white guys did exactly what they said they were going to do, and then they developed some habits, and then their business went under. But that's my point. I would rather take got off the ground and went under against never even got off the ground. Because that's exactly what happened. Don't let ideal get in your way. You find the best person that you can. And what you do is you make sure you control the table. That's what you do. Doesn't matter who you bring in. You make sure that you control the table. Now, ideally, if you can, you want to give opportunities to your people. And owning a success, you have to have a successful business to provide those opportunities. You don't bring people in and make a successful business. You make a successful business, and then you bring the people in that you want. So did you do everything you needed to do to have that successful business so that you would be in a position to pick and choose the people you wanted to elevate? Or were you trying to put the cart on top of the horse? Forget in front of them. We didn't put it on top of them now. That's what you have to ask yourself. But, brother, you can never make a business decision. Business decisions have to be made absolutely amorally. You cannot make them based on race. You don't do something deliberately detrimental. I'm not saying that. But you can't make them with an ideal of race or an ideal of this area of town or an ideal of working with this person. Mona told you she had to fire one of her friends. Guess how many ideals that broke?
Whole lot.
But her friend got in the way of revenue. Whoa. Nothing is going to be more important than revenue, not if we're going to keep a business or not. And that's the decision you're always going to have to make. You go find the biggest go-getters that you can. And if you can, you get their phone number immediately, and you be on the phone with them as much as you can. You form a bond with them as quickly as you can, because like I said yesterday, they're going where you're going. And they are foot to the floor to get there. That's where you want to be.
Most definitely. And I had a Muslim guy. I was cutting his hair one day, and he said that he was in a business of himself, so I asked him some questions about it. And he told me, is barbering what you want to do? I said, of course, this is what I want to do. And he says, you want to make your own business? I said, yeah, exactly, that's what I want to make, is my own business. So then he said, okay, tell me, do you know business management? Do you know economics? Do you know accounting? I said, no, I don't know none of those things. And he said, okay, there's no way you are going to have a successful business if you don't know none of these aspects about having a business. Now, Jason Black, I want to ask you, should I go back to school to learn about these things, or should I read about it?
You should be familiar with them. You do need to learn how to balance your own books, yes. You don't want more money going out than coming in. But hopefully you will get to a point where your business is so prosperous that you need to hire an accountant to make sure that your taxes stay straight, and so he can tell you if you're going out of business and just didn't notice it.
Gotcha.
So he is correct. Those things do need to be a part of your business, but you don't necessarily need to know all the intricacies of them. You do want to be familiar enough that nobody is screwing you over. You don't want your accountant sitting up here running off with all your damn money. You don't want that. But you have to do all that stuff yourself and balance your books yourself. No, you don't have to do that. But you do want to be familiar with what that is. You do want to be familiar with the balance sheet. You do want to be familiar with your lines of credit. You do want to be familiar with what your banker thinks of what your business is. That's another thing. Have a banker. They will let you know if this business is doing terrible. They'll let you know when you ask them for a loan. And the answer or how many times they pitch a loan to you is going to let you know how well your business is doing. Because if they look at you and look at your account and your balance sheet, if they see this business is doing good, they're going to offer you everything they got. If they see it's not, they're going to offer you little or offer you nothing. But you don't have to get a degree in economics or business management. The reason that most people fail in business is because they go into the business without enough money. They are undercapitalized from the day that they walk in. It's usually what does them in. They had just enough money to open the doors, as Mona said yesterday, and nothing more. That's what does them in. After that, it's a matter of you keeping track of stuff. If you got other people keeping up your bills and counting your money for you, that's a problem. You want an accountant to make sure that what you added up was correct. You don't hand your money over to an accountant to add it up for you unless you're at such a stage that you just can't do it yourself. But even then, I would recommend that you take the time to make sure that your books are straight. You make the time for that. But as far as having a degree and going back to school and stuff like that, no. I think what he simply meant was that you need to have some understanding of how you're going to manage those things. So the two things you will need to make, at the beginning, you will be able to do all those things yourself, okay?
Yeah.
Because it's two stages. You go from being a self-employed to being a business owner. Self-employed is when you bought yourself a job where you're making the same thing or just about the same thing as you would be making if you were working for someone else. That's being self-employed. Being a business owner is when you're making so much revenue that you can't handle all these customers yourself and you have to hire other people. And they make the money for you, and you just make sure that everybody's not messing things up. That's the stage you want to get to. At the self-employed stage, you'll be able to handle most of the finances yourself. But you don't want to stay there. Because if all you stay is self-employed, you are the most vulnerable person there is. You want to get business owner stage, which means you'll need other people to help you keep track of all this for you. You're going to need an accountant. You're going to want a tax attorney, and those are not the same thing. Hopefully, you can find a tax attorney who also is an accountant. Hopefully. But if you can't, hopefully you'll find that so you can keep your costs down. But if you can't, then you'll need both of those to begin with once you get to the business owner stage. Other than that, no. You'll find out relatively quickly if you're doing it correctly or not. What I always tell people in owners of this yesterday, most businesses fail within 3 to 5 years. Did you go into your business with enough money in the bank in reserve to hold you down for the next 3 years, even if one customer doesn't walk through that door? Now, if your answer to that is no, you need to rethink this. If the answer is yes, let's go for it.
Can I add one thing?
You can add two things.
Okay, young man, this is what you have to understand. A business is not profitable. The only way that a business, a hairstyling business, is going to be profitable for you is that when you locate a building, that building, you should be able to pay for that building if everybody quits. So you, like Jason said, you want a small overhead, which is your finances. If everybody walks out the door tomorrow, you will be able to take care of that. So you open it small, and as you see yourself growing, and you still know that you can handle that yourself, then you keep on expanding. If you can get multicultural people in your salon, that's excellent because you are the business owner, and you don't care who works for you as long as they pay that booth rent every Saturday. So start small. Make sure that you can handle it yourself because a hairstylist is a peculiar person, and they're very fickle. They will walk out. People gravitate to the new salon, and when newness wears off, they go to the next new salon. So you have to make sure that you cover yourself at all times. Don't get over your head.
Gotcha, Mona. Gotcha. Okay.
Now, and I don't even work in hairstyling, and I've seen situations where that happened, where all the stylists left. I've seen that.
Yes.
And believe it or not, becoming a successful hair salon, and Mona, tell me I'm wrong if I'm wrong, you actually can have more trouble with that kind of scenario happening the more successful you become.
Exactly.
Because having an uprising happen, once they see you're successful, they're going to start leaning on you. And having an uprising happen can be very easy to see occur.
Yeah. Because what you have to understand is that they're independent contractors. So they work for themselves. You are just the host of where they do their business. So sometimes they're going to want a boss, and sometimes they're going to say, I'm an independent contractor. I can do what I want to do. So you're going to run across a lot of headaches. It's a curse and it's a blessing. And that's exactly why I'm at my old salon, because seven people left at the same time and went with the new guy because he didn't treat them correctly while they were there. Because had he treated them correctly and was not just puffed up saying, I'm the boss, when that new guy went to open his salon that was not established, they would have stayed with him. So it's a fine line on how you treat people and how you conduct yourself as a business owner.
Good point. I carry that mentality with me everywhere I go. But the next thing I wanted to know was, I know I need to learn more about business and everything. What I thought of my next goal was to expand and maybe open up my own beauty shop, because what I've noticed in Oakland, there's a lot of Korean beauty shops that are open, and I've seen none that are black-owned yet. And that's what really irritates me. What every time I see a Korean person in an Audi or a Mercedes, I keep thinking to myself, that's our money that they have in their hand that they're spending. And every time I go into these Korean places, they give me this smug, disrespectful look, like if I'm dirt under their foot. And I keep thinking to myself, if that was our money in our hands, there would be a different type of respect in their eyes when they look at us. That's the one thing I want to do is branch off and open up my own beauty shop. But the thing is, as I'm doing research about it, I'm seeing that the beauty industry is mainly controlled by Koreans. So how is that possible for black people to even get into it?
Are you saying beauty shop or beauty supply? Are you saying beauty shop or beauty supply?
Brain fart. Beauty supply shop or beauty supply. That's what I wanted to say.
Well, they have monopolized that for so long, you're going to have some money because your prices are going to have to be comparable to theirs. If they can go get the grease for $4 and you have to sell it for $6, you're going to lose. Mm.
That's true.
And that's why I was asking Mona about yesterday, when, like, with Kazuri and everything. It's like that kind of hit me in the gut because I was like, are you serious? So they really did collapse. And that's the dilemma that we're in right now, because we're in a situation where we're trying to create a market that was already there, and now we're trying to resurrect a system that was already there, and we gave it away and whatnot, and it's very hard to maintain that because the hair care industry for black people has fallen apart for a very simple reason. We don't practice economics. Your hairstylists don't make it a point to buy exclusively from black suppliers, and your black customers of your hairstylists do not make it a point to go specifically to a black stylist. Nobody has exactly. any type of group loyalty within the circle.
Exactly.
And at every level, everybody is willing to turn everybody else. The stylist has no loyalty to the customer. The customer has no loyalty to the stylist. And the supplier has no loyalty to the stylist. So the stylist has no loyalty to the supplier. And thus, the supplier has no loyalty to the customer either. Nobody sees themselves as a black person. They just see themselves as, I'm a stylist, I'm a supplier, I'm a customer, and may the best man win, and these other people have been running it ever since. That's not the way that an economy is fully built. That's not the way it works. That's not the way it runs. So that's a tremendous headwind. If you want to know why, of all the businesses I ever thought of getting into, that's never been one, that's why. Because I have never met a black woman, and the women are the majority of the customers where the money is. I've never met a black woman who had loyalty to a hairstylist unless they were little old ladies. If they're young, man, they will jump out that chair in a heartbeat.
Exactly.
And I know because I have paid for enough black women to get their hair done. I won't even go through how many stylists that we've been through. I've been through enough of them. And sometimes it was my girlfriends with the problem, sometimes with the stylist. Go ahead, Mona.
My one suggestion to you would be this. Whatever products that you're using on your clients, you sell that to them. You suggest the shampoo, you suggest the grease, you suggest the antiseptic. You have a supply of that in your shop. Have your little retail underneath your station, and you suggest those products. So when you say $15 for a haircut, and, hey, how about using this grease? If they say, oh, that smells good. Oh, I have it right here. And that will give you some extra money, that little retail that you have also. You understand?
Got you, Mona. Good point. Good point.
I'll let you have a last
one. I've learned a whole lot from you guys, a whole lot. And, Jason, I study you and I watch you well. So keep doing what you're doing, brother.
And it's a tough job, but I have to do it. Thank you very much for calling us, brother. We appreciate it. Make sure you get in touch with Mona. She's got a lot of knowledge for you there. Mona, that was really depressing, too, because I didn't get to talk about that much yesterday. But it's like, how many do we have left out there now?
How many what?
As far as black hair care equipment suppliers, how many do we have left now?
We don't have any. They sold everything. And the majority of your African products that have African names are basically owned by white people. They just have the name. It's a marketing scheme. We don't have it. I have one black distributor, and the rest are white, and they come from somewhere else. As soon as we get $1 million or something, we're done. And as far as our stylists, they're inconsistent. Sometimes they only want to make $300 a week. They won't even come in or show up for their clients. And they don't understand that people don't say, don't go to Mona. They say, don't go to Mona's hair salon. it's really hard. And I think that's where there's a deterrent of people wanting owning businesses. It's hard. It's harder than knowing what you're going to make every week because you don't have that loyalty. You come in the shop, and my customer for 5 years will be sitting in Rebecca's chair. Or they'll go somewhere else and pay $200 and come to me and want to pay $75 because somebody jacked them up. But I told you not to get that in the first place. So, yeah, you got to be on your P's and Q's. And when in hairstyling, you have to save your money because in the summertime, they're going to be swimming and doing all kind of things. And what's really tore us up right now is those lace front wigs. They're killing us. They can slap on a wig for a month. We have no clients. It's a mess. It is.
I mean, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, what I mean by we're facing this tremendous headwind because We're talking about creating a vertically integrated economy where my girlfriend is the customer, Mona does the hair, and she gets the supplies from Zuri. And it's like, but the supply places are all gone, so guess what? The top of the chain is already gone. Right. What the hell else does that leave?
Right.
You know, I mean, it makes it very difficult. This is something we're always thinking about. I do cover this somewhat in my documentary, since I am oh, yeah, I have to mention that again there. My documentary is 7 a.m. You can all go ahead and check out some of it over there at the website, 7amovie.com. In the documentary, I talk to a number of the most influential black people in America. One of them that I speak to is Alayla Bundles, who is the great-great-granddaughter of Adam C.J. Walker. And so, you know, we're going to talk about the hair care industry. But Mona, just out of curiosity, what do you see as a roadmap, or is there one, to reclaiming our own hair care industry?
You know what, I wanted a salon that everybody owned. Instead of all of us competing against one another, let's get this building, the best of the best, and let's own one building. And then let's try to do something else. But everybody is on individualism. Until we respect each other's craft and try to help each other get better, there are going to be Koreans doing hair eventually. We have white people doing black hair. We have Hispanic people doing black hair. And we lose all the way around because we will not create any kind of unity. We are competing with one another, still, from the lowest point to the highest point. I'm better than you. I have more money than you. I drive a better car than you. Just trivial things that selfish. When I opened my salon, it was built from the ground up. Nothing had been in there. And a guy came in and he opened up a Hot Atlanta Wings. And then this other guy came in and he wanted to open up. He said he was opening up a cleaners. I said, open it up in here. He didn't want to open it over here. He wanted to go somewhere else and say, I'm over here. We would have had a cleaners. You can eat, drop off your cleaner's clothes, and get your hair done and build that whole shopping center. And they don't want to do that. And you really get tired of throwing out ideas to people because you're just wasting your breath. So what happens? Then the Koreans come in and open up a nail shop. Then the Chinese people come in and open up a donut shop. Then here now we got Starbucks. Then we got a white hair care. And now we're just one little business surrounded by Hispanics and white people, and they're making all the money, and we're getting a little bit of something. We don't know how to go in somewhere and shut it down. This is ours. We don't know the concept of ours. We don't.
I know how to do a lot of things. I don't know how to correct a person who does not want prosperity for themselves. I can tell a person starting a business, hiring an accountant and their taxes, I can't help them want a better life for themselves. Somebody has the ability to earn $3,000 this week, and they walk out of the hair salon with $300. They've left $2,700 on the table.
Exactly.
How do I help somebody who thinks it's okay to walk away from money? I don't know what I would do with somebody like that.
You have to fire them. And then once you fire them, if your boyfriend is $165 a week, you just lost $600. Times that, times seven, and you're done. Till somebody else comes in the door and says, I want to rent a booth. Or they want to go on commission. If you have a commission salon. So although you're trying to serve the community, you have to serve yourself too. You have to make sure you don't fall trying to help other people.
What do you have? What would we have to do to get the hair care salons to be to practice group economics with the suppliers?
You know what? The State Board of Cosmetology has all kind of programs like that, Jason. Nobody does anything. It's a selfish type of society. They want to be prosperous. They do. They don't want anybody else to prosper with them. They want to be HNIC and everybody is beneath them. They don't want to stand shoulder to shoulder with a leader and all of us be leaders and all of us shine. They don't want that. The State Board of Cosmetology is all...
Plaza or a Nation Islam moment where somebody goes around and tells them, hey, you're off code? Do we need that?
We need, you know what we actually need? We need to get with like-minded people. And like I said, you have a cleaners, I have a beauty salon, you have a restaurant, you have such and such, and we become the role model. We become that structure. Seven buildings in this on this block, like recreating a Black Wall Street. Our people do not believe anything until it's done first. Then they join the bandwagon. They don't want to be the leader. So like I say, if we start having little small communities in each state that are thriving, then they're going to want to knock down the doors to come in there. Because now I want to be a part of this. You can't even get a person to do a hairstyle until they see it on TV. So we're followers. And we have to get out of the following mindset. So if there's one city that's got it going on, oh, trust me and believe me, they'll be coming in. Because everybody, we seem to want bragging rights. I belong to this club. Well, you know, you said it for the last 3 weeks here. I'm on this side, I'm on this side, I'm on that side. Not even knowing what side, why you were on this side. Just to say I belong to something. So we have to create it. It might take you or me to go to Louisiana, you to come to L.A., somebody come from Georgia, and we get one central location, and we do the damn thing. And then they're going to be like, aha, it can't be done. We're scared. We're scared. And we have too much pride. If a spouse can sell hot cherries and hot oranges on the side of the freeway because they have to feed their family, that used to be us. We don't have no pride when it comes to taking care of our own. Nowadays, when I was growing up, if you were hungry next door and I had two pork chops, you're going to get one pork chop. Nowadays, we don't know our neighbors. We don't know anybody. We have nobody to watch our children. We don't have a support system. We're just out here by ourselves trying to make the best that we can to prove that I'm not like these other black people. I got something going on. Not understanding that if you don't make it, I don't make it. If you look bad, I look bad. If you represent me in a negative fashion, I look represented in a negative fashion. We are not getting that. We want to floss on one another. Look what I'm rocking. Look with my shoes. Look at my purse. I get my hair done every week. I get my nails done every week. I got these rims. I just got this new TV. That's what we do. And white people and Hispanics, they rocking the cheapest shoes, the cheapest pants, but they got a cap. They got some money in the bank. They got something to fall back on. They have a nest egg. We have nothing. We are working from paycheck to paycheck and complaining and whining and bitching and moaning, but we don't want to do anything but do that, complain and whine.
Kwame Kilpatrick is going to jail for damn near the rest of his life for stealing money. But when he was out here on the streets and could have done something for his people, boy, I mean, the big Cadillac. And the suits, well, I mean, he was just G'd up. And meanwhile, you take a look at Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates Hell, take a look at Steve Jobs. Have you all ever seen a picture of Steve Jobs wearing a suit? Ever? I got to tell you right now, think about that for a moment. Have you ever seen a picture of Steve Jobs wearing a suit? Mark Zuckerberg looks like the most awkward individual you've ever seen in your life wearing a suit. When he does, most of the time he doesn't. Hell, the damn shareholders meetings, he comes in there looking like Steve Jobs, looking like he just rolled out of bed. Kid in his age group in the country and looks like he just rolled out of bed, got enough money to buy all of us. Twice. His mentor, his spiritual mentor, Bill Gates, same thing. They're not trying to impress you. He's trying to impress those shareholders. He has transcended a damn suit. Suits bore him. We spend the rest of our life chasing them and never actually get there. Can't figure out why it doesn't matter. Go ahead and see if I can grab another caller here. Caller from the 443. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello.
Hi, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Simone. I'm calling from Maryland.
Hello, Simone from Maryland. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, what's on my mind? I was actually listening, but no, I can definitely comment. Well, I like the fact that you guys were going over, you and Mo, you guys were going over the fact that we sort of don't really tend to build with one another. We don't generally, there's no mentorship. There's no, really no support. Currently, even in my situation right now, it's whether do I stay home with mom, save up as much money as I can so that I can start my own business or at least have enough collateral, or do I stay home and still get the stress from mom, sort of be torn down from other family members saying, well, you shouldn't do this, you can't do this, you're not allowed to do that, you should just be safe, get a job, get married, do what you need to do, and that's it. And I feel like there's so much more to life than that, so much more than what I can do. They're still smarter than that, and I don't think that they see that potential. And I believe it's because they were never able to do that for themselves. They were never able to build at all. Never saw that in the household. And I feel that maybe, in a sense, because I do have that drive, they themselves may feel slightly jealous of that. Or maybe feel that if I reach a certain peak or reach a certain height, they won't. Maybe they feel that I'll be leaving them behind.
I've never really had that problem in my family. I've never really had that problem before. But I'm going to tell you right now, based on what I've seen and experienced with other people trying to get partners in business and seeing how they were raised, you know, I've never had a bunch of drug addicts in my family either, but I can tell you it's a big problem out there. You are going to have the most trouble from your family. In my case, I'm an exception, but I understand that I'm an exception. Most people, especially most Black folk, don't have that type of support from their family.
Yeah.
The family is sitting there trying to tell you how to get a job at the plant. And I know because when I try to get partners, that's the mentality that they had.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually just gave up on the idea of partners altogether. I did. I had to. I couldn't have that concept hanging over me. You're going to waste your damn life trying to get people to get on board with you. So I'm just going to tell you right now, if you are, you can hope for support and encouragement from your family. You can hope for it. Sister, don't be sitting there requiring it. Now, I'm just going to tell you right now, based on what I've seen and with other people, it's never been a problem for me, but I have always been acutely aware that, man, we're the oddballs out here because everybody else ain't doing this. You got to damn near threaten mom at gunpoint, you know, for $20.
That is absolutely true.
I mean, much less an encouraging word, you know. I can't tell you, and Mona will back me up on this. She's on the other side of the country, and I know she will because I've seen this every single place I've been. If you are a young black female and you know how to do hair, your mother is going to be the last person who is positively supporting you and encouraging you. I have never met a black female who was doing hair, whether it was at the housing project, at her house, or in college, whose mother was behind her, or whose father was 100% supportive of that. I've never seen it. I'm 37 years old. Got people do hair in my family, and outside of my family, I've never seen it. It's like walking into the Twilight Zone when you come over there, because I don't see it anywhere else, and I know that that's what they're living like. I've never seen it. I've seen a bunch of them get told you ain't doing nothing with it. I've never seen one get the way that white folk do their children playing the piano.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen a young black female get that type of encouragement for doing people's hair at home. Never seen it. Mona's got 14 years on me, and I don't know if she's ever seen it. I can tell you I haven't.
You know what, Jason, you're absolutely correct, because like I said, at the eighth year, when that lease was going to go from $1,100 to $1,700, although my father told me not to open a business, when I went to tell him I was going to have to close my business, then I was thought of as being a failure. However, he showed me an account with $80,000 in it that he could have helped me keep it open. He didn't, but he told me I better find a way to keep it open. And that's why I had to make the decision to sell it, because I knew I couldn't do it. So you're absolutely correct. And they don't patronize your business unless you're going to give them a discount or you're going to do it for free. Now, they'll say, oh, my sister has a beauty shop. I don't think she's doing that good, but she has one. And when I was constructing my business, everybody was calling me. Oh, we're going to pray on it. And, oh, yeah, it's going to work out. As soon as I sent out those grand openings, for 8 years, none of my friends have been to my salon. They wouldn't know if I was a liar or not. They wouldn't know if I was homeless. They wouldn't know anything. That's where the envy comes in and the jealousy comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to do it. And I just want to add one more thing for anybody that's listening. When you negotiate a contract for a building, you can ask for 3 months of lease. I just, with my barber, he's going to open up another shop, and he's getting 10 months free. You can have months free, and you want those months free after construction. You don't want those free while they're doing construction. So that will help you, you know, with your money. You get a couple of months free for going into that shopping center. That's an advantage for you, and they will do that for you. They're not going to tell you that, but you should ask for that. Can I get some months free for coming into this complex? So he's getting 10 months free. And I did. I got 7 months free when I started. And I started with three boosts. And I knew if I could not work with that 7 months free, something was wrong with me. And that's what also helped me stay for 8 years with no support. Our people don't take risks. Our people don't step outside of the box. And there is a fear and there is a jealousy. But do what you need to do for yourself.
7 months free. I mean, that's like having what? Man, well, depending on what your rent is, it's $1,000 a month. That's like having $7,000 in the bank.
Exactly, because he's getting 10 months free. His lease is $2,400 a month. That's $24,000 he just saved. And if he can do something with that, he's in there. And that's how you have longevity, because we don't get the business loans because our credit is jacked up. But that's the advantage that we can take to secure that we stay open.
So are you, when do you think that, or when are you trying to do it for yourself, Simone?
Well, actually, this Saturday I'm moving out. I realized I couldn't take it anymore. So I'm moving out into my own apartment just so I can focus on myself. Not just focusing on myself, but really, I guess you can say focusing on myself. I'm caught in between two things as far as going into business, whether should I start my own bra company or if I should start my own dance studio. Now, dance is really my passion. However, I, growing up, because I never had the support from family members saying, hey, yes, Simone, you can do it. We're going to put you into these classes. We're going to support you. We're going to come to all of the games. I was used to be captain and coaches coming up from high school and into college and even finishing college. I never really got the support, so I feel like I never really honed my skills, as you always say, on your broadcast. So it's that feeling of, am I actually good enough to actually do this, to actually have a business and in dance and have my own studio here in Baltimore and say, you know, I can go ahead and do it and, you know, charge at a certain price where it's competitive compared to anybody else around Baltimore. Now, I know in Baltimore City, there's not a whole lot of dance companies or even studios around, but I'm starting to see some of them coming up. So it's like, should I get in the ball now? Should I get rolling? What should I do? And then there's this also idea that I've had about a bra company, but thinking about starting an online business for that. So as I said, when I'm home, I can't really focus on what I need to do because there's always mom, granddad yapping at my ear saying, no, don't do that. You need to be, you know, continue to work in insurance so that you can make the money.
Those sound pretty expensive and pretty intensive. Are you sure that you'd be able to make it through your first 3 years? Also sounds like it's going to be dependent on other people. That sounds like a hair salon without cutting the hair.
Yeah. Yep.
I can't think of anything more finicky than a bunch of dancers. I mean, could I imagine having to work with 10 Beyoncés?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just pessimistic. But, I mean, hey, if that's really what you want to do, and if you have the ability to do that, like I say, if it's going to be, it's up to me. I can just tell you right now, though, don't stress yourself. And don't spend a whole lot of time fretting over assistance from your family. I hate to say this. I really, really do, Simone. I hate to say this, but I would be negligent if I didn't just say it to you like it is. I'm sorry you're black. Help from your family ain't really going to come naturally. I'm sorry. But that's just the way it's going to be.
Right.
Can I make a suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should work in a dance studio and see the ins and outs of it and see if that's really what you want. Because when you're self-employed, you're not going to make business as an African-American woman right off the rip.
Right.
And you're not even a success, you know, until after 5 years. So you have to find out if you're going to have that endurance. So surround yourself, whatever your passion is, surround yourself around the people and see how they operate and see if that's truly what you want to do before you invest money in it.
And don't just restrict yourself to just hanging out with black folk either. Like I was telling the other fella, that would be the kiss of death. Especially for more highbrow things, but don't sit up here and restrict yourself. That's not what you want to do. That's another thing. We kind of have this ideal in our heads that, you know, if I do move forward, I'll move forward just like this. Man, it's like finding a marriage. Find somebody with some sense. Find somebody with some sense who's trying to go where you're going and stick with them. Stick with them. I'll let you have the last words, sister.
Well, thank you for letting me talk in Black First.
Black Burster, you all have a good evening. I guess this is our evening for this. Caller from the 334, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, Mr. Black, how you doing?
What's your name? Where you calling from?
My name is Bill. I'm calling from Alabama. I guess I kind of had you on that Tracy and Friends show a couple of months ago. But
I remember.
Yeah. You know, I was listening yesterday, and I thought you guys had a lot of profound points, mainly the first. You know, I owned a comedy club some years ago. I started the comedy club, and I didn't make excuses. I had been a real estate investor. The market was falling apart. I took my last $10,000. It's all I had. I kept trying to get people to, you know, go in with me. I took my last $10,000, didn't know where I was going to get anybody to come in and put it down on this building. And I did, like I just said, I negotiated out for like 8 months. You know, 2 months for a build out. So I took the $10,000 and did a build out. Finally got a guy to come in with me, and I opened it. Well, of course, I'm out of business now, but I learned a lot in that. And I guess the main thing I want to convey to the listeners is that failure is not really what – I guess not trying is the only failure that you can really have, because I know a lot about doing that business, and the wisdom and the things I know about managing a kitchen, managing a bar, being a barman. I did all the hats, the marketing. I did everything myself, and I know the ins and outs of that business, and that is priceless because I did it hands-on. And I'm not afraid, because actually I got back out, got into IT, and I'm doing that now, and I took myself out of the hole, so to speak. But so I'm actually about to jump back into some things. But it's failing is not going to hurt. You know, I had a fear at first, like, you know, man, what if it fails? But, you know, I think sometimes it's just you just have to go out there and get to work yourself up in a frenzy. You know, I listen to a lot of Les Brown. I listen to a lot of motivational stuff. I find you very motivational. So I listen. Because you're one of the few Black people out here that don't make excuses. A lot of people, it's not your fault. It's the white man. It's not, you know, and a lot of times I don't believe in that. I just believe in going out there and do battle. Because you're not going to change it. I can agree that there are things out there, but what are you going to do? Just sit there and just let them just not do anything? Or are you going to go out there and fight? And a lot of times when you get in a fight, if you fail.
In life, you're going to have three choices. You're either going to bow down, lie down, or knock them down. There isn't a fourth option. And there are too many people who are looking for a fourth option, and they usually end up bowing down on their way to that fourth option. That's the problem. I want to ask you about something here, Bill, because you're a good guy to chop things up. We've been talking a lot about hair. People have learned more about hair care in the last 48 hours on the Black Channel than they ever thought they would in their lives. But I want to ask you about something like that, okay? Now, you said you started that you invested in a comedy club, and I got a couple of questions of my own about this because I had the opportunity to see – Years ago, I was looking at Cat Williams, and I was sitting there looking at it, and I was like, you know, it's not like Cat is at these really big venues, you know? It's not like, you know, you remember back in the old days, you and me are old enough to remember Eddie Murphy Raw. And you're in this big, huge place, you know, with 30, 40,000 people. And, you know, that was back in the old days. Andrew Dice Clay, the Dice Man Cometh. And whatever that other special was, you do 30,000-40,000 people. It's like, you know, a rock concert. But that's not what these guys are doing nowadays. You know, Bill Engvall and Jeff Foxworthy and Kevin Hart and whatnot, they're not doing those huge venues like that. Now, Kevin's made like 13, 14 million in just the last year in 2013. He made a truckload of money. And that's cool. I got no problem with that. I'm more power to him. But my real question is, I take a look at something like Cat Williams, I take a look at somebody like, and my real prototype now is Corey Holcomb. What that man did with Your Way Ain't Working, I sit there and it's just a comedy show, but I sit there and I marvel at it. It wasn't a multi-million-dollar production, but man, it was right up there with anything you've seen everywhere else. And I'm sitting there looking at it like, man, tell me, Bill, why can we don't have more brothers doing something like Your Way Ain't Working?
You know, I'm not really familiar with that, but I'm going to go look into it. But I just know my personal story that what really ran me out of business, there were two things, three, I guess. Number one, the people, I'm from Montgomery, the people did not want to pay. All I charged was $10 to get in. They complained about that. They didn't want to pay $10 to get in. Then when I took it down to $5, but I had a two-drink minimum, they didn't want to pay that. It wasn't a club. There was no dance floor. It wasn't, so I really didn't have to worry about too much security because it was more you come sit, have dinner, enjoy the show, go home in about 2 hours. That's it. That was one of the problems. The second problem was the workers. The workers were messy. Anything happened in my club, they went and told everybody all across the city. And everybody I'm dealing with is black. And primarily, some of these guys were beforehand were my friends. And when the place went out of business, they were the biggest gossipers. I mean, it was as if they were so they just had an orgasm because I was always the one that went out. They saw me make $500,000 a year flipping houses beforehand. They knew how successful I was, and they used to brag. But when I fell on my face, this is when I saw who they really were. And that's something in the black community I just, you know, I struggle with because I have a heart for especially brothers. I like to try to help people. I had guys I would mentor, and they weren't qualified to be, but they'll come in and run my houses and do stuff, get the wrong materials. But I still would do it because I had a passion for them. But when my comedy club went down, one in particular was the main one. He went out and told a bunch of people. That was the second one. The third one, my partner. My partner, and I didn't find this out after the fact, was an ex-drug dealer, which I didn't know. That's where he got all his money. And he didn't want to – I felt like, look, we got 25 employees, 8,000-square-foot building. I got a kitchen, a bar. I'm trying to market. I'm trying to wear all the hats. He wants to run the place out of his pocket. He doesn't want to hire an accountant. He didn't want to put the – we'll have money. He don't want to put it in the bank account. He want to keep it in his pocket. It was just one of those situations. And then I had found out, gotten wind that, okay, he may be starting to try to dabble in it again in the drugs. I said, okay, I got to. That's when I told him to buy me out. It was just a big mess. So my people, I didn't have no problems with white people. I had a problem with our people. My people, it's almost like they were gleeful to see us out of business. And it was like, I'm saying like there's only three in the country. We were number three. So it was a fight. It was just a major fight. I went through a little, I guess, depression after. It took me about a couple of months to pull myself back together because I gave it my heart. I mean, Jason, I was in the streets. I mean, I marketed hard as I could. I bought flyers. I wasted I don't know how many thousands of dollars at the radio station. I mean, I did whatever I could. That's all I did. I was running around with, you know, running out of gas, just marketing, giving it all. I laid it out on the line. I said, if we go out of business, it's not going to be because I wasn't swinging. And I went as hard as I could. And when it failed, it broke my heart because I put my blood into it and sweat. And it just, in black people, man, and it really, for a while, Jason, I had a disdain for black people and my own people. I was like, I just lost faith in them. Not because they didn't come to my business, but the attitude they had about it, it was almost, you know, the gossip. I would see people, hey, what's going on? I heard about what happened. I'm like, it was hard for me. But it was my own people, you know, like Julius Caesar, you two Brutus, you know, I just felt like betrayed because everybody that knew me knew I love to help. I would have taken young black guys and have them. This kid used to crump dance. I used to pay him $100 to come in there and crump dance sometime in between the acts just to try to give him some money. I mean, everybody stabbed me in the back. So it, black people, to me, it seems like we hurt ourselves more than any other person. But I'm definitely
the problem is that we see a business as a social institution or as a charity, as opposed to seeing it as what it is, an economic enterprise. And that trips us up so much. We bring in a bunch of people who have absolutely no business being there. None. Now, for example, like your partner now, how much money did he put into it when it was startup time?
Well, initially, it took a lot of money to get the build out, and I had tapped out. So he came in, gave a certain amount, but then that's when he started coming up there all the time. So he only gave about $20,000, which over the grand scheme of things, that wasn't a lot because we were losing money every month, but even still, we were raking in about $18 a month.
Now, here's the thing about that, though. I mean, and let's be honest, Bill, okay? Because this isn't your first rodeo. But in all honesty, the dude comes up with $20,000. He obviously was not working for Chevron. So were you really concerned? Because you just said, you know, that you had tapped out, so you needed the money. Were you really very scrutinizing about where this person got their money from?
Well, at the time, I knew him. We used to be at the when I was a real estate investor, I used to see him at the Y all day. We were one of the few black guys that would be at the Y all day playing basketball, lifting weights. He would be there, too. So I noticed I would see him at Lowe's and Home Depot. He had a lot of rental houses. We sat and talked, and I had known him for years. He's like, well, yeah, I got a bunch of rental houses. I don't have to work. It was like that. It wasn't like he was just, so I didn't know, you know, and I knew him, I talked to him, you know, I mean, in hindsight, I mean, obviously it was a bad idea, but, you know, going back, I probably should have vetted more. You know, at the time, I was like, well, you know what, I got the business, I know this guy, I've been knowing him for about 8 years by then, so I'm thinking, okay, he seems to be an up-and-up guy, I talked to him, and I mean, you know, at first it was fine. It was just when the money, when it started getting tight, that's when it started getting ugly. And I don't want to run this place. I wanted to hire an accountant from day one. I was like, we need to hire an accountant because there's just too many moving parts for this business, and we don't have any experience. So if I'm going to focus on marketing, managing the kitchen, the bar, the waiters, the acts, the marketing, I mean, it's just 10, 15 different hats that can be worn. I can't bet and do the accounting and do the – I knew enough. I have a degree in business enough to understand. I mean, he wasn't – you know, and the guy, my partner, had an attitude like, well, I don't want nobody knowing the business better than me. I'm like, well, we're not on the street corner selling drugs. You know, we're doing a real business. You're going to have to hire an accountant so that we can see every penny. So by the time we would sit down and start counting out every penny, you know, and sometimes we wouldn't. We'd be like, oh, man, we thought we did good last week and – we still lost $800, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, because my thing is, and I mean, I've been in that position to myself. You know, that's what happened with Suge Knight. Of course, he went, you know, he went looking for somebody who did that, and it just seems like in so many instances, you know, we seem to bring trouble to us. And it's a shame that, you know, you get somebody who's a hustler and they bring trouble to you, or you get somebody who brings trouble and they're a hustler, one way or the other. But if you had it to do over again, what would you have done differently?
If I had it to do over again, I would have just let the building win. If I can't get the money, first of all, I probably would have went and did a kiosk in the mall selling women's purses. That's what I should have did. But, that, you know, I see that as a viable. I know some people making pretty good doing that. But thinking back, that was an idea I had in my head, but I was like, nah, the comedy club, the people were riding 80, 90 miles away to go to a comedy show. Comedy shows sell out. We don't have comedy here. You know, it's a good idea. The building's not bad. The rent, I mean, the rent was about $2,800 a month, but the lease. But that's not bad for 8,000 square feet with a kitchen, full kitchen, freezer, everything. So I thought I had a good deal. And, you know, I wouldn't do it again. I would not. I mean, and I've had people call me. And that's the funny thing. Montgomery, Alabama, just for your listeners, if they ever come to Montgomery, is a street. It's a hood city. It's just, you're going to do anything dealing with dope boys, you're going to make a lot of money. If you're going to do something where people have to, you know, they can't dance and buy bottles and show off, Montgomery's not your place. So I had a lot of ex-drug dealers call. Hey, man, I heard you did the club. I got two offers for people wanting to go back in. I turned it down. I said, no, that's okay. I said, I can give you the phone number. You can go do it without me. Because I just, after going through that, it just taught me a lot about, you know, doing business with people in the black community, but just people in Montgomery in general. I just don't see that. You know, Montgomery is one of the most backward cities. Just, you know, I'm just being honest. Now, I know people may say that about every city, but Montgomery to me is special. So I just wouldn't do business, that type of business there. So I just wouldn't do it. If I had to do it all over again, I would just, you know, I either let them have the down deposit, you know, walk out of there and, you know, give them, you know, $3,000 and take the remaining $7,000 and go do what I got to do.
Well, we'll keep that in mind. Open up a comedy club, Mobile. Might want to open a drive-through daiquiri, but not a comedy club. I'll let you have the last word,
brother. Hey, just keep doing what you do, man. I love what you do. Your guest is real insightful. My mom did hair, so I used to go to those Brown Brothers shows, man, growing up. So just keep doing what you do, man, and I know everything is going to work out in the long run for all of us if we just stay focused.
Thank you very much for joining us, Bill. Appreciate you calling in. Please do again. A lot of places like that around the country, too, Mona. A lot of them like that. You know, you got out there in California, for example. I mean, that's the hay of the dope game and whatnot. All them drug dealers that we had out there, and most of them are either in jail or flat broke, didn't turn out for us at all like it did for the Italians or the Irish or the Jews. The dope game didn't end for us at all like it ended for any of them.
Exactly. That same hustler mentality you use to get your money, that's that same hustler mentality that you use to keep your business open. And they don't correlate that together. As soon as they open a business, they're still hustling. That's slow money. I'm making fast money. And then you look up and the business is closed. The business is bankrupt. And everybody in it has to go somewhere else and find somewhere else to do. I want to say one thing about the black family unit. The majority of our parents practiced tough love, and we seem to do something that no other culture do. We don't set up anything for our children, and we send our children out into a world that we haven't even accomplished yet. And so once we do that, and our children, they're making it, they go out and they become drug dealers and they go out and be strippers because they don't want to, you know, disgrace the family. They don't want to have to come back home. So that's why they go out there and it leads to them doing all kind of illegal things because I can't be ashamed and I don't want to call and come back home. So I got to do something. And we're really quick to send our children out at 18. You got to get out at 18. And they don't have nothing set up for them. They don't have 9 months of rent set up for them. They don't have $10,000 or $12,000 for them to, you know, I'm going to give you this and you mess that up, you're on your own. We just send them out into the world. I feel that children, if you can stay at home as long as you can and abide by those rules and stack your money, you're going to be at an advantage because being an adult is nothing nice. Don't be out there running up your credit and getting all those credit cards. And if you can stay at home with mom and dad and abide by those rules, get your act together. We are quick to send our children out to pay for other people's prosperity. We have not been taught to get our own. We have not. We have not taught our children to come from our house to their own house. I think maybe down south they do that more than they do in California. We have not been taught that.
You know, you've hit on so many great points there. Mona, we have so many children without a purpose or a plan. too many of our children are coming into this world because somebody decided that they wanted to have fun on a Friday night with no condoms, and we don't have a purpose or a plan. And I take a look at people like Warren Buffett. I take a look at people like the Bronfmans with Seagram's Gin. I take a look at people like the Disney family. I take a look at people like Vince McMahon and his children. Vince had those children knowing full well the whole time that he was going to pass the WWE down to one of those kids. That was his purpose for having them. And guess what? It's one of the most successful companies in the world. All the other wrestling companies went out of business. WWE is still there, and it has a plan of succession. If Vince drops dead tomorrow, Stephanie takes over. And we don't do that to black people. Now, I went into that. It dovetails off what you said, because how much running off did Vince want to do with Stephanie and his son Shane? Stephanie and Shane have been seen in the WWE since they were old enough to jump off the top rope. And, oh, yeah, he made them do that, too. He made them work in the business. He made them understand the business so that when it was time for them to take it over, no nepotism here, they understand the business. But he was not eager to run his kids off anywhere. Donald Trump, he paid for a top-notch education for his children, but guess who he's grooming to take over his business? Yeah, I'm sending you off to school so you can come right back here. He knew why he was having those children.
Exactly.
Black folk have kids, and that's all we got. I had kids. You didn't have a family. Let's just be honest about it.
Black people have kids, and they have an abundance of kids, so that when they get old, the kids will look out for them. And if you have a business and your children see you struggling, they don't see that struggle as an accomplishment. They see that they're struggling. I better go get a job. So that's a deterrent for them to even take over your business, because they don't want to do that. They don't know the significance of having your own and being self-sufficient and being self-employed and not have to answer to the white person. They'd rather answer to the white person than to do all this. I got to do all this. Oh, no, I'm not running that business. I don't want to take that over. Your child will sell your business for a car or a ring or a gold chain or something. We don't have any loyalty. We're messed up. We're messed up. Yes, we are.
And I mean, if you don't set that idea that I'm going to have children and my children will take care of me in my old age, that's third world thinking.
Yes.
That's third world, Nicaragua, the Philippines, you know, outer Cambodia. That's third world thinking. We live in a fully industrialized country, and you're talking like a third world citizen and then wondering why it's not working. Your children cannot take care of you if you do not give them resources with which to take care of you. You heard the 64-year-old dude call 2 weeks ago talking about he gave his children spiritual wealth.
Yeah. Spirituality. And you know what? That's my greatest fear. I'm 53, and all the choices that I made in my life that did get me in the proper position that I need to be in at 53, and my greatest fear is that I have to depend on my son, and I only have one child, and I don't want to depend on him. So like I said, I'm always thinking of a master plan to get me to the next level. Because I don't want that burden on my child. I don't. That's my only fear in life.
And the problem is that even if he is willing to take that on, the question is, will he be able?
Exactly. And why put that burden on your child?
Yeah, the dollar that he's going to have is going to be worth half what it was when you were his age. And the economic landscape is only getting less forgiving, not more. Even if he was willing to do it, even if he's 100% willing, you know, we're just assuming that he will have the capacity to do it, and that's wrong.
Yeah.
What
is.
If what something happens to him?
Exactly. And our children should be able to live their own lives and build their own prosperity with our assistance. And what I think we don't understand as parents is that once you have a child, your life is no longer your own. You are to guide and mold this child into greatness, greater than you could ever be. That is your job. You send that legacy, and it continues. This is a family legacy. We do things. We are bosses. We're shot callers. We handle business. That's what we have children for. Now, if you have a child and they don't want to do it, and I tell you like this, I think I've instilled all the morals, values, and principles in my son that I could. So if he goes out here tomorrow and robs a bank, it won't be because I didn't teach him that. It's because that's what he chose to do. And my heart will break to see him incarcerated, but it will not break because I did not teach him. That was his choice. But we are supposed to make sure our legacies live on. But if we give them nothing, they have nothing to aspire to. And he will not say that he never saw his mother work hard. He will not say that he never saw his father work hard. What he does with it after that, that's on him. But he cannot make that excuse. And whatever I had to do, I did it. I never worked 10 minutes from my job or 10 minutes from my home. My son was basically latchkey. So I had to think, was I a quality mother or a quantity mother? But I had to do whatever I had to do to keep that roof over my head. And I think when you think about business, people don't understand this is my livelihood. This is how I take care of my family. And if I'm providing you a service, why won't you patronize me? Why do you hate me? We get loved for the worst things in life, the raunchiest things to do. We get praised for that. We don't get praised for doing good. We don't.
And see if I can grab caller from the 239. You're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from 239. We've interrupted Blues Night, apparently.
Hello, I'm just listening.
Okay, say something because you're about to get dropped. Let's go ahead and put you back on hold. She's listening to Big Mama Thornton or something. See if we can grab somebody else here. No. Caller from the 954, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, Jason, how you doing?
I'm big in Florida. What's your name? Where you calling from?
My name's Dean. I called you last night to listen to your show again, but I would like to pass a comment if that's okay with you.
Okay, like to what?
I said I wanted to go ahead and speak for a moment if that's all right with you. I was listening to your show again. You know, I kind of got your Twitter list.
That's open up your line so you can speak. Yes.
All right. Well, you know, I was listening to what the other lady was saying. A lot of what she was saying is very correct. But I think sometimes, you know, as us being and trying to be the type of people to solve a problem, I think we're looking at very minute details in many cases. Like, I think the major problems with black families and just black culture right now, black American culture right now, is economics, family, and really just those main two. And the reason why I say that is because, you know what, if you had money like the other guy, if black people really, I mean in education as well, excuse me, that's the third one. For example, if black people had money, actually had money for themselves, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, some of the situations like the other brother with the nightclub had to go through. Those would be non-existent, you know, if we had, like, money like how the Asians do and how whites do it and how the Latinos do it. You know, if you had some kind of income flowing, you know, some kind of economic structure amongst yourself, you wouldn't fight over pennies, you know, and you wouldn't have to worry about the boasting. If we had our family structures, you know, family knows how to be loyal to family. You know, and everything, the best thing, I think the basic thing is that we learn of how to interact with people, it starts with family first. You know, I think that family is your first natural friends, as I like to call it. You know, if we had that structure, you wouldn't have a problem with us being envious nor jealous. You wouldn't have as many of us being envious and taking pride in watching other people fall, you know. And even myself, I've had to catch myself quite a few times even just watching some of the stuff that's just recently gone on the Internet. You know, I had to catch myself and remind myself, you know, don't take joy in stuff like that, you know, and watching other people's calamities. You know, even though sometimes it's a little entertaining, but you have to come back to your sane mind or to a better mind of understanding that, you know what, you know, this is what a person is going through, you know, and let it be where it's going to be. And the thing is about education, if we were more educated, like meaning like if our family structure was together, we would have better education, you know. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that all three of those kind of correlate with one another. And I think that's one of the biggest things that us as a black culture in the millennia, we really need to focus on. You know, I think the rest of the other things that we go through would just simply solve the problems, you know, the smaller problems that we look at, you know, like the envious and the attitudes we catch amongst one another and the misunderstandings of how to run business. Because, I mean, they all go hand in hand some kind of way. That's all I really needed to say.
Well, I thank you very much for your comment on that, and I think you're absolutely right. If you don't have a strong family unit, how can you have a strong community? If you have not learned loyalty to your brothers and your sisters and your mother and your father, I would be a fool to think that you're going to have loyalty to Mona, much less me. And
correct.
We fail to instill these values in the children young, and then they go out and take that lack of values with them. Broken homes are only going to create broken communities. That's all a broken home can do. A child from a broken home can only create a broken neighborhood and a broken society. That's all they can do. Thank you very much for checking in with us here, brother. Definitely do give us a call back again. I'll try to take one more call real quick here if I can. Caller from the 602, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, yeah. My name is Paul. Calling out of Phoenix.
Hello, Paul out of Phoenix. Well, what's on your mind, man, to wrap up?
Okay, sorry about that, brother. I got to be honest. I found out about you through Tommy. I've been paying attention to this back and forth. I've never heard, you know, actually giving you a shout. So I listened to one of your videos, the one where you said the zombie movies and how blacks need to be doing their own thing instead of begging whites to put them in things. And then I figured, well, let me see if I can call in and hear his show. And there is a stark difference between the two of y'all. I'm originally from Tennessee, and I've been out here about 15 years. And when I hear you talk, and I hear your audience talk, it ain't talking for the sake of talking. And it's not like that on his show. I was listening to his points, and you know he's got nothing but venom, and then he backs off and venom and yeah, things like that. And then I hear you actually come to have the experience of Jason Black. It's a totally different, it's just a different program altogether. I feel bad for actually hearing only his side and believing only him. And then upon review, I saw your video dedicated to him, I guess in response to his bullying. His audience is quite large. And I can only imagine what you've had to, your inbox looks like. Yep. I have to apologize to you, sir, because hearing the difference, it is like night and day. Tommy, he's not somebody who has what the French call principles, and he's willing to do whatever he sees fit whenever. It seems like with you, it's a consistent message of empowerment via business. I just have to say, you know, people in his chat room, they were, you know, last night, it was making fun of you saying black first, it was French first, not you first. all types of madness, and I really hate that I actually gave that any attention, because I don't believe that you can like both of y'all at the same time. Either you are serious or you're a buffoon. You know, and again, you know, now being here, it's just a totally new way of thinking. You know, I have my own cement business out here, constantly competing with the Mexicans, you know, I have not been active politically like I should have. You know, I've made some decent money in my day, and I have given not once to any political party. I just voted and walked home.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, now you're figuring out what a mistake that was.
What a mistake. I can only imagine if I even made the attempt, maybe some laws could have been changed locally. I could have, maybe some brothers would not have been in prison, because maybe from us controlling the politicians, we control law enforcement, more brothers on the force. You know, I failed my people. Excuse me. So, yeah, brother.
I was talking
you know,
to a fella the other day, 2 days ago. I was talking to a fella out there in Phoenix, as a matter of fact. And we were talking about the Hotel and Restaurant Workers Union, which basically is Latin controlled now. Not hating on it. I mean, I'm just stating the fact it is. And they are very politically active. They got is pennies. Each one of them has got way less as an individual than you do. And yet they are extremely politically active. They didn't just say we're workers at a restaurant and let's hope things go okay. They said we better put our money where our mouths are for our best interests. And they got, as you know, they got Arizona locked down. They don't have to worry about a damn thing. They got Arizona locked down. So much so to the point of the Phoenix Suns, when that law came out in Arizona that the governor Brewer, I think it was, signed, that the Phoenix Suns changed their shirts to Spanish. Now black men getting gunned down every day. LeBron James never changed his jersey for Trayvon Martin or Jordan Russell Davis. Never heard the New York Knicks change anything for Sean Bell, Amadou Diallo, Abner Louima. Never heard of it. But over there, they're strong. Over there, they're strong. And, you know, I can understand to a certain degree, as black people, we don't learn early. Very early, as business people, for example, we don't learn that the purpose of politics, and I get into this in my documentary, because most black people think that they know what racism is, and they don't. And they think they know what politics is, and they don't. Politics is the system by which you distribute your society's wealth. But if you are not a person with wealth, guess what? You don't have a voice in politics. And even if you are a person with wealth, it doesn't matter if you never showed up in the political process. Dr. Claude Anderson said that you take control of your economy. And once you have control of your economy, you use that to control the next level, which is the political structure. We sit up here and we get money, but we don't get the money for the purposes of controlling the political structure. We get the money for the purposes of, you know, whatever personally we want to do. But we did get the money for the purposes of controlling the political structure. So it doesn't matter how much money you got in Arizona. If you're black and get pulled over, you got no pull. Now, when whites and Asians get pulled over, they know exactly what they're going to do. Why? Because they got their money, and then they immediately went off and found the first politicians they could buy. The politicians know them by name. Now, I'm pretty sure that you all have something similar in Arizona. We have it here in Louisiana. I'm pretty sure that you all have something similar out there in Arizona, where they actually catalog who gives political contributions and how much you gave. Now, we have that in Louisiana, that is cataloged who gave, you have to catalog who gave you political contributions, how much money they gave, and who it was. And understand something, if you're a politician, you remember, yeah, you'll give a little thought to the guy who gave $200. You remember the guy who gave $10,000. You remember him very well and very easily. And you're definitely going to remember him when it's re-election time. We as black people don't see that kind of thing as an investment. We see it as an expense. And then we get all this money, but our condition never changes because we took the money and sat on it, and you're P. Diddy at the club popping bottles and talking about Ciroc and your Bentley, and when the police pull up behind you, you're just another black person who's driving a Bentley. You're just another black person. And that's the kind of backwards thing that we have to deal with there. How long have you been in the cement business?
Been in the cement business, 2014. Been in the cement business since about 1983. Yep.
So 21 years. I mean, sorry, 31 years.
Yep, 31 years.
Let me ask you here, do you mentor other black men business ownership?
Well, I had to say my staff is black, but do I, actually, I guess because when you say mentor, I'm thinking more employer. Not anything more than as far as who works for me and, you know, giving my tutelage on the job and things like that, but the youth.
Nobody approaches you and says, I want to start my own business. Can you give me advice on that? Nobody ever says that?
No, not really. What I'm noticing about my people is, and what I have noticed is that because of the where they were raised, who raised them, they want something for nothing. And see, the cement business ain't nearly as hard as it used to be. It's a lot more machine work and things like that. Tools are better, but... the idea of laying cement, that whole process is unattractive for a lot of people. You know, if your mama ain't never seen your mama do an honest day's work, or you ain't never met your father, you ain't never seen him go to work. The idea of hard work is disastrous to you. You know, if you can't rap, sing, run, shoot the jumper, you know, you don't want to do it. So no, I don't have people approach me. You know. Right now I'm at war with the Mexicans out here because all they do is they underbid me, and no matter how many laws you say, well, you can't hire an illegal, a white man will hire one. So, you know, my reputation, I would like to say, is pretty solid, but solid reputation versus cost-cutting wins every time.
So... I guess my only last question would be, what's the plan?
Well, right now, like I said, I do fairly well. Just at the Phoenix area, you know, I had to go out to Flagstaff, Tucson, Globe, little places like that where I can offer, I can get it done a little faster than somebody with a pickup truck and a bag of cement. But my plan is, you know, I have a two sons that basically, you know, own the company with me, and, you know, we do it pretty well, but now I just feel like I failed them because I've isolated them. I made sure that they kept the family crest in order, so to speak, and I never had them think community. Not any more past than reading your books about the Egyptians and the Nubians, but other than that, I never, you know, I didn't teach them that, and they reflect me, you know, and after hearing... Just hearing, just, you know, where you coming from is, you know, I feel bad that I've misled what I love most, you know. But I have a question, if I may, and this is gonna has nothing to do with what we were talking about, sir. But Dr. Umar Johnson, that is real, right? That's real. He's in the documentary, right? I saw the clip. That's real.
Yes. He is in the documentary. I've got 3 hours footage with him.
Yeah, because I don't. You know, the Tommy was saying, you know, the audio was saying he had no idea who you were. All he knew was your video dedicated to the discrimination he he was facing in the Northwest, but I was like, how am I disputing that? And you know, I don't know. You got video.
When people are messed, there were a lot of things in that video that were wrong, and name dropping wound up getting the smackdown put on you. And yeah. All I can say, brother, is there is a reason that this is the fastest growing internet radio program out there. There is a reason why people gravitate to this and are fleeing away from messiness and detritus. When was the last time you ever saw me put up a video like that? When was the last time you ever, I mean, these are people who do that kind of messy stuff every day. You don't see me engaging in messiness every day. I'm about business. I'm about building. I'm about with my people and getting something started. I'm not entertaining. I'm not about that. So all I can say, brother, is instead of people worrying about where I got my footage from, they should start trying to show people some of theirs.
Because
so far we've heard a lot of talk, and so far I'm the only one who's actually shown anybody any footage anywhere. And you kind of start getting the impression that when I release a video on, all I'll say about this, and then I have to move on. All I'll say about this is I released a video on Friday. In that 72 hours, 5 videos were made about me. Not one of them said, oh yeah, and here's my footage that I shot. 5 videos to change the subject. Not even one to say, by the way, Jason doesn't know what he's talking about. Here's my footage. Because if somebody doubts me about Umar Johnson, I can put my footage up. Can they do the same thing? Oops.
Well, I got to say thank you, brother, because what I didn't understand was his move is publicly funded, but he gets mad when the public asks questions about it. I just feel like how do you do that at the same time? How can you ask the public for money, and then when they say, hey, give us something, you know, you just basically roast your listeners. I just didn't get that. You publicly funded, but the public can't ask questions.
Ryder 1908 made a very good point also. At no time did Umar Johnson say that he did not know me or had not talked to me. At no time did he say that. He just said that he's not sure and how long has it been. And since he couldn't be given any specifics, this man, you all don't know what Umar Johnson's calendar looks like, but he's got it on his website. This man is outrageously busy. You have no idea how many documentaries sat down and talked for. This man is incredibly busy, incredibly so. And I've got nothing but the utmost respect for Umar Johnson. He is tireless. He is relentless. He is one of the most outrageously generous and welcoming and friendly people you will ever meet in your life. I have no problem believing that this man sits down for 5 or 6 interviews per month. I have no problem believing that whatsoever. The only real deal is, the question is not, can you prove whether or not he talked to me? The question is, can you prove that footage I put up is not him talking to me? That's the question that you really need to ask. But like I say, people who are building show their proof. People who aren't talk about people who are building. Let me know if any, let's just compare that. So people have a choice to make. You can sit there and keep watching people engage in this childishness, this bickering, and this nonsense. There has been no back and forth. I've just been getting attacked for 2 months, and I finally said something about it. So you can watch this childishness that's been going on for years. You can watch that bickering that's been going on for years. You can wallow in the contradictions and the name-calling, and now people are having to say, using my name, and they're not getting the point that, hey, everybody's not with this messiness. You can wallow in that, or you can get with somebody who's going somewhere, man. And all I can say is you go to my website and you go to my YouTube and listen to video after video after video talking about building and talking about black empowerment. Can they say the same thing? And now it's just time for you all to, it's time for all of you to choose. It's time for you to choose with your feet, and it's time for you to choose with your wallets. But it's time now to choose. And to anybody out there who is listening, if you feel like you do want a refund on that, I've gotten a number of people who have contacted me. If you do want a refund for any of the donations that you made to their project, get in touch with me on Facebook at Black Authority or at Jason Black. And definitely that's something we want to get everybody together who does refund. If you don't like the fact the way your money is used, let's get together and let's get organized to make something happen on that. But it's time for people to start choosing with their feet. Stop complaining about the problem and get up and do something about it. You have alternatives now. Maybe you didn't have them before, but you have alternatives. So that's all you have to do is start exercising them. That's all. But I'm glad that you like what you're hearing. Business people love what they hear when they come to my broadcast. It doesn't sound like a fraternity. It doesn't sound like, you know, a keg party. It sounds like grown people sitting down and saying, hey, let's organize and let's do something about this. That's what it sounds like. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Like I said, oh man, I got me rambling. Because I'm just, you're a grown man on that microphone now. You know, and it's just, I feel better talking to you because, like I said, you got your act together and you're still young. You didn't make any mistakes. You didn't have no children early to anchor you to one place or to be a financial burden to you. You know, God bless kids and all, but you know, kids they ruin things. You know, and it's just the company you keep here. The Mona Lachey. If you're still on the phone, hello, ma'am. Hearing her, she's got a mind. There is no just sitting here laughing. I mean, there was people last night on his show that were just saying, it ain't always about money. I almost threw up, my friend. It's all about money. Why do black people think money is just so esoteric? It's just maddening. But yeah, brother, last word, man, is thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for checking in with us. Please call us again because we'd love to have your insights.
Will do.
Well, Mona, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. I want to thank you for joining me here as well. And I'll be hearing more from you as we go on, I certainly hope.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. Black First.
You Black First. Thank you very much for joining us. This concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future, and the future is uncompromising.